brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. What shall we talk about? What shall we talk about? Anything going on in the news or anything happening? Oh, yeah, that little election that we've spent, what, about $7 billion trying to decide? About $7 billion this election cycle? First and foremost, I think we could spend $7 billion a hell of a lot better than we did. And in the future, maybe we should be looking at how much money is being wasted on these elections. Maybe use some of that money for roads and bridges and education and health care and things that we actually need. What I would like to see, I would like to see the money taken out of it, publicly funded elections, and let's see how people actually manage a campaign, how they energize their volunteers and energize people to participate. You know, kind of like a democracy. It's just a thought. Anyway, tonight we're going to get updates from Chicago, from the Obama headquarters in Chicago. Also going to get an update from Colorado, Virginia, from Philly, Scranton. And, of course, right here in our backyard, we've got correspondents all around the country going to be giving us updates on what's going on. Also, Wisconsin, looking forward to the Senate race there. I'm hopeful, very guardedly optimistic. The numbers coming in seem to be right on track. But we won't know for a couple more hours. A lot of things happening all at once. Going to follow the Cartwright race, which, you know, I think he's going to be a shoo-in in the 17th district. Going to be following the Stilp race in the 11th congressional district. Also some other ones, folks we've had on the program, folks we're hoping that will be taking control of, well, of our elected offices. I don't know if you saw the big news this morning. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, the folks over at Fake News and Fox, they needed something. So let's go after the black guy. The new Black Panther Party, they're intimidating people, according to Fake News on Fox. And it was a really big, angry-looking black guy opening a door for people. Basically what the... And they kept showing him opening the door over and over and over again. And I think they were just looping the tape because I don't know if he was opening the door all that many times. But, you know, he had to have something. Because you couldn't talk about what's really going on in Philly, which is numerous people being turned away. Tomorrow, the lawsuits, I'm sure, will fly because people who have voted at the same poll for years were turned away. College students in droves turned away, forced to vote with the provisional ballots, which, you know, as we've been talking about on the program, you don't stand there and take the provisional ballot, you stand and fight. But what we've seen, you know, in Philadelphia, a lot of that, and across the state, some very, very bizarre stuff. We're going to talk about some of the weird stuff that's happened today. But for the most part, I'm anxious to see where the Senate ends up. There are a number of races up in the air, and like I said, in Wisconsin and Ohio. Looks like the one in Florida has already been called. You know, some big races to go after. We'll talk about those as well. But for me, it's the battleground states. We're going to see how these states roll out. Just before we came on the air, CNN basically called the entire middle of the country whose polls just closed, just pretty much called those all for Romney. And that goes without, that's pretty much undisputed at this point. You know, from North Dakota all the way down to Texas, right down the middle, those are basically red states. Where it's going to come down to, it's going to come down to Ohio, it's going to come down to Wisconsin, it's going to come down to Virginia. And I got one of those text messages, hey, oh, breaking news. USA Today informed me that breaking news, Ohio, Florida, and Virginia are going to be very close. I just thought I would pass that along. It's breaking news. Like we didn't know that 6 months ago. But it's now breaking, so it will be interesting to see where that goes. Also, Nevada, I'm looking to see what happens there, and also in Colorado. Some of the battleground states, where we're going to go. As I told my wife before she went to bed, I'm hoping, dream pleasant dreams, the nightmare might be tomorrow morning if Romney wins. As of right now, Mittens has the lead, 152-123. But that will go down as the evening goes on, or at least that is the hope. But you look at these Senate races, and for me, you know, the important thing along with the presidency is, you know, the Democrats holding on to the Senate. And as I said the other night, I think they're going to. I think it's going to be a 51-49, 52-48 scenario, depending on what where some of these seats go. In Connecticut, for instance, they've already called Lyndon McMahon out. Think about $100 million she spent on the two on the last two senatorial campaigns there in Connecticut. And what I loved about it is today they were actually handing out flyers for her with Obama. So there was, you know, like Barack Obama with a check mark and Linda McMahon with a check mark, so that you would take, oh, hey, she's with Obama. I guess you got to do what you can do to win, right? But that was pretty, well, pretty funny. Joe Manchin, he has been declared the winner there in West Virginia, so no real suspense there. Bill Nelson, the middle-of-the-road Democrat from Florida, he has been ruled the victor over Connie Mack. So that may actually help Obama, the hope can be. I'm waiting to see what happens. For me, the big ones are going to be in Ohio and Massachusetts, Missouri, Indiana, and Virginia. Those are the big senatorial races, in my view. We're going to keep an eye on that throughout the evening. To answer some real big questions, I mean, Missouri, for instance, you know, how insane are they? I mean, you got this Representative Todd Anken, who has, you know, basically been the poster child for everything that the GOP has been pushing in their war on women, and still close in this. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Virginia, of course, with the retirement of Jim Webb. Now you've got the two former governors going at it, Kane and George Makaka Allen. Last I saw, polls had them at dead heat. Again, it's going to come down to turnout. Some of the other big races, for me, Montana is going to be a big one. John Tester, who has been a friend of working people. This Denny Rehberg, I'm telling you, this, wow, way out on the fringe. And I'm hoping the folks of Montana don't go crazy. Also, Tammy Baldwin, I'm told, doing fairly well in Wisconsin. The polls were moving her way as the days have gone by. So good stuff there. Over the weekend, you know, I got an email from someone who said, hey, you know, there's this crazy right-wing pastor. And I got a whole bunch of stuff about this guy. And I generally don't like to talk about these crazy religious people. But this guy caught my attention, you know. He is the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Dallas. His name is Robert Jeffers. And well, I just wanted to play a couple of the clips because it just blows my mind that someone would go up on the pulpit and you're supposed to be talking about, here's what he had to say about Obama.
Now I want you to hear me tonight. I am not saying that President Obama is the Antichrist. I am not saying that at all. One reason I know he's not the Antichrist is the Antichrist is going to have much higher poll numbers when he comes, okay? President Obama is not the Antichrist.
Well, thank you for that. That was very nice of you. Huh? What a very nice Christian thing to say. He's not the Antichrist. I know he's not because his poll numbers suck. So he goes on. He goes, hey, the Antichrist, since he's not it, you know, he may be coming.
What I am saying is this. The course he is choosing to lead our nation is paving the way for the future reign of the Antichrist. You see, when Antichrist comes, he is not going to be able to suddenly seize power and suddenly make these radical changes. He's not going to be able to suddenly restrict speech and religious worship and commerce. Why? To do that suddenly would cause a revolution that would topple his reign on the earth. And yet, Revelation 6 says, when Antichrist comes, he will take over power automatically. Revelation 6 says he'll ride a horse that has a bow with no arrow
with
on
no
it.
No arrow. He's going to take over automatically. And he's going to do it effortlessly. I love that sing-songy thing. You got to give him credit. He's got a nice shtick there. But it's going to be effortless. Automatic. It's going to be automatic. But, well, hold on. Contradictory, same statement.
His overtaking the world will be effortlessly. It will be without any effort at all. How does that happen? The only way that's going to happen is if there is a gradual erosion of God's laws and our personal freedoms over a long period of time.
Interesting. And who's doing that? Oh, yeah, it's that black guy, that Muslim guy in the White House.
And it will be that gradual erosion of our sense of morality, our adherence to God's laws, that gradual erosion of our personal freedoms that will make it relatively easy for Antichrist to take over without any opposition whatsoever.
Hold on. Whoa. Back up. I thought you said it was going to happen automatically. Did I miss something? Now there's a whole gradual thing going on that was going to set the... I thought it was automatic. I thought it was certain. Again, you know, I love these guys who, you know, they're kind of all over the map, throw their little opinion in there. But I love the punchline.
And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, I believe it is time for Christians to stand up and to push back against this evil that is overtaking our nation. To stand up and push back against these actions that are paving the way for the final world dictator. And the best way to push back against unrighteousness is at the ballot box. And this coming Tuesday, we have a decision. The decision is not between Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, no.
The choice before us is the choice of righteousness or unrighteousness.
I thought for sure he was going to go good and evil. Thought for sure that was going, but I thought for sure he was going to say, you know, instead of the ballot box, I thought for sure he was going to give me money. Because that's usually where they go with that whole spiel. They're pretty good at that one all year round, but I thought for sure it was give me money. Because that's what they're good at. The sad reality is these are supposedly religious leaders, and these are people that, this is somebody people follow. Kind of twisted, don't you think? At least I think it is. This whole very black and white worldview, you know, that Muslim guy, he's evil. That's the same guy you just heard who basically said that that Romney's religion is a cult and that it was okay to vote for a guy who was the head of a cult, like Mormonism, because reelecting someone like Obama was akin to allowing Hitler to come to power in the 30s. Yeah, good Christian, Judeo-Christian value there. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We made a promise, so we'd always remember. No retreat, baby, no return. Blood rose on a stormy night with a vow.
On his final campaign swing, President Barack Obama told thousands in Madison, Wisconsin that Mitt Romney is trying to sell old, tired ideas that have already failed. Obama said this election is about the future and is also about trust.
You know I tell the truth. And you know that I'll fight for you and your families every single day as hard as I know how. You know that about me. And you've been there with me. And after all we've been through together, we can't give up now. Because we've got more change to do. Wisconsin, our ideas have been tested. We've tried them. They worked. The other side's ideas have also been tested. They didn't work so well. After Bill Clinton left office, during most of the last decade, we tried giving big tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans. We tried giving insurance companies and oil companies and Wall Street free reign to do whatever they please. And what do we get? Falling incomes, record deficits, the slowest job growth in half a century, an economic crisis that we've been cleaning up after ever since. So this should not be that complicated. We tried our ideas. They worked. The economy grew. We created jobs. Deficits went down. We tried their ideas. They didn't work. The economy didn't grow. Not as many jobs, and the deficit went up.
U.S. Senate candidate Tammy Baldwin said the nation has come too far to turn back now, and Wisconsin will help President Obama move the nation forward in the next 4 years.
We have come too far to turn back now and go back to the failed policies of the past. Tomorrow we have a chance to finish what we started, and I know tomorrow we will vote to continue moving Wisconsin and America forward. Forward with a strong middle class. Forward on a path to shared prosperity. And forward with President Barack Obama.
When I believe in promised land,
been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. So as the votes are being tallied, as I've said time and time again, the hope is that we return Senator Casey back to the Senate, because there's a lot of work to be done. And I've got the senator on the line. Senator Casey, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Good to be with you.
So I hear you're stealing $716 billion from Medicare.
Well, that's one of those untruths that we've had to keep pushing back against. The first point on the issue of Medicare is that you've got one side not just saying they're supporting the guaranteed benefit of Medicare, but voting that way. I've been voting to support and strengthen Medicare the whole time I've been in the Senate. Most recently, in the health care bill, the Affordable Care Act, we added 8 years to solvency. We put in dollars for prevention so that more than 30 million seniors have already gotten the benefit of prevention, which is not only saving a lot of money, but making people a heck of a lot healthier. And thirdly, we've been helping, obviously, on filling the coverage gap known as the donut hole. So we've strengthened Medicare. The other side wants to take away the guaranteed benefit. They don't have a problem with doing that, making seniors in the future pay a lot more. And if you voted like my opponent did to support the Rand Paul proposal, that means you're basically in here in about 2 or 3 years. So that's beyond radical. And then when you get to the question of this 716, some of the things I just mentioned are what came from that change that resulted in a $716 billion change, meaning more preventative services for 30 million seniors, more help for prescription drug coverage. So, for example, in Reagan, Pennsylvania, 250,000 seniors have already gotten more than $660 per person because of that work that was done to fill the donut hole. Yeah. Thirdly, adding 8 years to the solvency of Medicare. So these guys who are talking about repealing that 716 are doing a couple of things. Number one is you're adding, or you should say subtracting, to the years of solvency of Medicare. You're hurting seniors on prescription drugs. You're hurting seniors by taking away the benefit of their prevention dollars. So I love hearing these Republican politicians who have health care, and often it's government health care, talk about how they want to repeal health care, which would be bad for children with pre-existing conditions, bad for people on Medicare, bad for small businesses. And, oh, by the way, you repeal the Health Care Act, and you've blown a $800 billion hole in the debt. So that's unless they have an answer for all of those, they better come up with another proposal.
Yeah, I mean, this election cycle, all I've seen is things from the Republicans that would make our debt and our deficits worse. And for me, one of the big parts of our debt has to do with our trade policies. If we could solve our trade deficit, which to me is the really important deficit in my mind, if we could solve that problem, I think the other things would fall into line. But I look at our trade policies, all of this outsourcing that's going on. You know, I know you sponsored a bill to stop the outsourcing of call centers. I think there has to be someone who's going to stand up and say, no more of this. We're not going to subsidize jobs leaving the country. We're not going to allow Romney to get away with saying, oh, Obama's shipping jobs over to China, when he was one of the guys on the front of it.
Yep. Yeah, they should. What we need to do is a couple of things. Pass legislation like the call center bill that you mentioned that we're working to pass now that says if you're a company and you're going to take jobs overseas, then you've got to do your part to let us know it's going to happen. So you got to give the federal government months notice, and then your company's name is going to be on a list, and there's going to be consequences to that. You can't get any more federal contracts. You've got to have some consequence for company shipping jobs overseas. Now, some people might think, well, you know, they get to do whatever they want. Well, that's fine. They can make a decision on jobs, but they've got to help the rest of us. They got to help give some notice so that companies and workers can get some notice, their company name should be on a list, and says you don't get any more government help if you're going to take jobs overseas. That's one. Number two, we should change the tax code. All these Republicans yelling about jobs overseas, they all voted against the attempt we made to change the deferral rule. If you ship jobs overseas, you shouldn't get your taxes deferred after you ship the jobs overseas. But unfortunately, that's exactly what the tax code allows people to do. The tax code literally rewards companies for shipping jobs overseas. We need to change it.
Yeah, I mean, there are too many carrots, not enough sticks. And, you know, the thing with this thing with Jeep, with Romney running around saying Obama's shipping jobs to China and Jeep's shipping all these jobs to China, for me, there's a teachable moment here, because what the Chinese are saying is, look, if you want to sell products in China, you got to make them here. And I say, for me, let's do the same thing. If you want to sell product in the United States, you should be encouraged, well, to produce it here.
Yeah, move your production to where the best workforce in the world is, and that's here.
Yeah, I mean, and we should, as you pointed out, offer those carrots for the companies that stay, but the ones that leave, little stick. Because I got to be honest, I see manufacturing not in terms of just, we need jobs, but I see it in terms of national security. I mean, if we can't build the chips that make our smart bombs smart, we got problems.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it does tie back directly to the workforce being the foundation of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next couple of months for me, I see this so-called fiscal cliff. They tell me, the sky's falling again, another hostage situation coming down the pike. What's going to happen, do you think, in the next month and a half?
Well, I think we'll get a bipartisan agreement to avert it. Neither side likes it. It was designed to be so objectionable that we would never fail to get people together to avoid it. So I think we're going to be able to avoid it, maybe not completely, to avoid all basically $109 billion that would impact the economy. That may be impossible, but I think we're going to avoid a lot of it. And look, it leads to an important, not just discussion about, but action that needs to be taken to get Democrats and Republicans together to reduce the deficit and debt, but do it in a way that strengthens the economy, that doesn't decimate the vulnerable like the Ryan budget does, and does it in a way that's responsible. We've done this before, as you know, Rick. You've covered it, and you've been aware of this for all these years, that under a Democratic president, we reached a point where we had a surplus, we had a growing economy, and we had projected surpluses when Bill Clinton left office of $5 trillion,
yep.
And that's with a T.
Yeah, I remember Alan Greenspan saying, we don't know what the nation's going to look like when we're debt-free. I mean, and this was, 2000. They had no idea what the future was going to hold because we were going to be debt-free. But that, that's a distant memory. So you look at this and you look at all the pain and the misery that could come out of this. And I guess I don't quite understand how it is that you can have people who are going to say, if you don't allow us to extend the tax handouts to the very wealthy in this country, we're going to hold everybody hostage. I just don't understand that way of thinking.
Yeah, what we should do is when we go back, we should have a vote, at least one vote, if not more, to say, let's say to middle-income folks, you're going to keep your tax rates in place. Everybody put your hand up. Are you for it or against it? Have that vote, and we'll win that vote. And then the second vote or the third vote can be, okay, let's talk about the wealthy. We can have one huge debate about. We can argue and fight all we want about it. And it might be that after you ensure that the middle class, middle income families are protected, that you have a negotiation or a debate about the wealthy. But the idea, as you said, and you use the right word, hostage, the idea that the hard right of the Republican Party is going to say, oh no, we're going to have a vote on everybody at the same time is just a way to force the rich to get more breaks. And look, they've tried it before, but I think they've really begun to run out of gas.
I got two other questions for you. One, you look at Emmanuel Saez, a guy from University of Cal Berkeley. His study recently came out that 93% of all new income gains since the end of the recession went to the top 1%. To me, that says that there was a recovery and a pretty decent recovery. Just the working people of this country didn't share in it. How do we get some of those productivity gains? How do we get some of that wealth that we're creating into the hands of working people? I'm a huge fan of organized labor, of allowing people to join and form unions collectively. How do we get people so that we don't have this massive gulf between the 1% and everyone else?
Well, a lot of it gets down to basic investments that we've always made, which has led to growth in education and training and research, innovation, all the things that have made our economy grow over a couple of generations now. And as part of that, the strengthening of the middle class that comes from the opportunity to join and form unions, the opportunity to collectively bargain and negotiate for wages and benefits. And too often what's happened in the last decade especially is you've got some ideological folks in Washington that are pushed by extreme organizations to say, okay, we're going to erect barriers to union membership or organizing, doing everything they can to undermine that basic right. Because look, when you consider where we were after World War II and where we are, if you take organized labor and unions out of the picture, and you take the GI Bill out of the picture, we wouldn't have a middle class.
Absolutely.
Simple as that.
Yep.
Simple as that.
And I agree. And I talk about my grandfather's generation quite often. You know, they came back from the war. They fought that war, but they also went to the shop floor and they fought for me to have a better opportunity for my future. And I say we need to be doing the same thing here going forward. Last question I've got for you. You know, you look at all of the money, just the obscene amount of money that's gone into this election. And I got to be honest with you, Senator Casey, there's got to be a way to spend billions of dollars better than we've done in this cycle. Is there any way to undo this Citizens United and start looking at reasonable amounts of spending?
Well, it's difficult because we had a vote on that as well, and the Republicans all voted against it. This measure we tried to pass in the summer was simply disclosure. It wouldn't have invalidated the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United. In fact, it would have been consistent with that decision because the court left open the possibility of having substantially more disclosure. We all voted for it on our side. They voted against it. Just to have disclosure. So if you're the Koch brothers or you're the whatever brothers, whoever you are, and you come to the public square to have your voice heard, if you have a big megaphone, we have a right to know who's behind, you know, the person behind the megaphone. And what they want to do is come to the public square with a big megaphone and then put a black cloak over them so they have a loud voice but no one knows who they are.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make any sense. We've got to have more disclosure. That wouldn't completely invalidate Citizens United, but it would provide a lot of information voters don't have now.
Because I can't imagine that your colleagues on the right wouldn't understand that at some point, you know, the sword that they're using now will eventually be used against them.
Yeah, and I think some Republican candidates might be scratching their head and say, you know, maybe I should have voted for more disclosure. I'm getting attacked by outside groups.
Yeah, good point. Well, I wish you nothing but the best of luck. And as this next month and a half goes along, we'd love to have you back and into the future as we fight for better working conditions for our families and better opportunity for our kids. I appreciate your time.
Rick, thanks so much. Appreciate your help.
Thanks so much, Senator Bob Casey. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. From the talk.
Wants me to give my money to someone like you. But I can't believe this, what a crazy man can do.
Yeah. Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
For a rich example of unbridled boss power in today's political process, hearken back to August, when Mitt Romney appeared on a stage with a group of Ohio coal miners behind him. "I tell you," the clueless candidate cheerfully exclaimed, "you've got a great boss." That would be Robert Murray, CEO of Murray Energy, who had previously held a $1.7 million fundraiser for Romney. But if Mitt had just turned around and seen the scowls on the faces of the Murray miners, he would have had a clue that they didn't quite share his enthusiasm for their great boss. One reason is that they hadn't volunteered to be there, but had been directed by bossman Bob to attend. Also, Bob was docking them a day's pay for taking the day off to be stage props for Mitt's campaign. In effect, they were compelled to donate to the Republican. Such involuntary support is routine for this corporation's salaried employees who've been hit up again and again for donations to Romney and other designated candidates. Murray himself sends dunning letters to employees' homes, specifying to each one how much to give and instructing them to send their checks directly to corporate headquarters. Staffers there maintain a list of those who did as told and those who didn't. "If you don't contribute, your job's at stake," one employee bluntly explained. Indeed, Murray deploys his lieutenants to squeeze the laggards. As the boss put it in one letter to them last year, "Please see that our salaried employees step up for their own sakes." In another letter this March, he even named names of those he considered shirkers. "I do not recall ever seeing the attached list of employees at one of our fundraisers," he said pointedly. This is Jim Hightower saying, after Romney's great boss statement, he added that Murray, quote, "runs a great operation here." Yeah, a political shakedown operation sanctioned by the Supreme Court.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
It is not worth fighting for this man if this is the kind of spokesman he has to respond to an ad like this by citing health care in Massachusetts.
Listen, but what we're watching and witnessing here.
No, I'm serious about this.
No, I'm serious.
Not,
I know you're serious.
There's no
I agree
point
with
in
you.
You're doing your show.
I agree with
there's
you.
There's no point in us going to a convention and pushing for this man if he's employing morons like this.
Yes, you know, the first thing Politico had asked Mittens today, if he was, you know, if he won, let's say by chance Mittens won, would you buy another dog? Would you get yourself another dog that maybe you could roof rack? And Romney said, well, one of the benefits would be to get another Weimaraner. And I guess we could probably hold a name the dog contest. I choose Loophole. Because I think if look, it's looking, the picture is now becoming clearer. It looks like Romney, well, not going to happen for Mittens. And good, give him a chance to go and play with his subterranean elevator, play with his cars and do all of those things because he is such a car guy. Give him a chance to go. But, you know, this whole idea that he kept pushing this, well, we're going to lower the tax rates and we're going to go to this territorial tax, which would have been a horrible idea. And fortunately, it looks like the people of this country have seen that it is a bad idea no matter how you slice it. But I look at this story that just came up yesterday or the day before about Apple, that Apple had paid an income tax rate of 1.9% on its earnings outside the U.S. last year. 1.9%, according to the company's regulatory filings. And you go, you know, you look at this, the world's most valuable company. They paid $713 million in tax on their foreign earnings of $36.8 billion. They paid 1.9%. And you look at this and you go, explain to me again this territorial tax thing and how that's going to help us? And I look at it, and as I've been saying for the longest time, this territorial tax, this is the Delaware loophole on steroids. This is the magic box, just in places like the Isle of Jersey or the Cayman Islands or you know, any of these tax, Panama or any of these tax havens around the world where they, you know, they got these nice little buildings with 20,000 big companies in it who scrub their profits. You know, little magic boxes. But I look at this and I go, you know, at some point, I had hoped that we would wake up and realize what's going on. And fortunately, I think we have. I think the reality is I think Romney's dead in the water. Pennsylvania has been called for Obama. In fact, the race for Senate here already called. We just spoke with Senator Bob Casey. He has been reelected, according to numerous news outlets. And, you know, as this picture comes into view, we're seeing more and more. It looks like the Democrats are going to hold on to the Senate. It looks like Obama will be returned to the White House. And it's going to kind of shake out the way we thought. You know, the Republicans are going to win their normal. The states that generally go red, the Democrats are going to win the states that generally go blue. But the battle states, it looks like Ohio is going to go. The way of Obama, and if that happens, I think it's game over at that point right there. I'm hoping before the end of the night, I'm hoping that we're clear on the way of finishing this up so that, you know what we can do tomorrow? We can start talking about how we're going to force things to get done. How we're going to make sure that, you know what, the fiscal cliff, as they say, doesn't take us down. Now, it's not something like, as we've talked in the past about, it's not something it's imminent. We can wait a little bit. And I think the president, should take a little time and make sure that people see where Republicans stand on this. And use it as a bargaining chip with them. Say, look, and I think Casey was right. Have a vote. Show people where they stand. Now, if I were the majority leader of the Senate, I would have done that over the summer. I'd have done that a couple of times. In fact, I would have done it as many times as the Republicans in the House went after repealing Obamacare. Because, look, if they're going to do nothing, if they're going to gridlock and obstruct and delay, at least let people see. So I'm hoping, I'm hoping that the Senate stays in the hands of the Democrats. Originally, it looked like Tammy Baldwin had been elected. I guess they've pulled that back a little bit. They've pulled that back. We'll see where that goes. Originally, they called Massachusetts for Elizabeth Warren. That, I guess, has been pulled back, which I got to tell you, I'd be really happy to see Elizabeth Warren. Because if you remember, she was supposed to be the person who was the original head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I think she'd have been fantastic at it. She also supports medical marijuana and is a huge supporter of LGBT rights, as would be Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. Looks like Obama has won also Michigan, and Debbie Stabenow as well has been, it looks like she's been reelected, or as Pete Hoekstra called her, Debbie Spend It Now. I mean, this has really been, if you think about it, a really nasty campaign season. I remember that ad from Hoekstra with the Chinese girl who, riding on her bike. Oh, thank you, Debbie Stab It Now. Debbie Spend It Now. And just really, there's part of me that's glad that we're done with this whole election thing. But I go back to the money, and I think all of the money that we've spent that's been spent on this, and who benefited from it? Did you and I benefit from it? Not so much. The big media companies, they benefited pretty well from it. They, in fact, someone was telling me that one of the big media companies didn't actually give cash. They just gave an in-kind donation. Here's some free airtime, or here's airtime. Now, I'm of the mindset, and, If you disagree, I'd love to hear why. I'm of the mindset that the airwaves are the public's. And if you're going to, control the airwaves, it should be for the public. There should be something in it for the public good, which is why I'm in favor of saying, you know, at the end of it, there should be free airtime allotted to both candidates. And how they use that time and how they use their resources, that's what we should be looking at. Not who can go to the billionaires and go to the people with the deepest pockets and say, oh, by the way, I've got $17 million of my own dollars to run a campaign. Is that the direction we want to go in? And fortunately, you look here in Pennsylvania, Tom Smith did run a $17 million Senate race out of his own pocket. Still lost, but had a lot of money doing it. I mean, closed a 20-point gap over the summer. So as this picture comes into clear, into a little bit better clarity, we're seeing some of the House seats coming around. We're gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about some more of the Senate returns, also what's going on the presidential scene. It looks like, you know, you're right about dead even, you know, 50-49, 50-50, somewhere in there with the electoral vote. And that's kind of what I'm interested to see when all of the votes are tallied. I'm hoping that Obama ends up with the popular vote as well as the electoral vote, because I can just see it now. Tomorrow, if it's just like it was during the Bush years when Bush lost the popular vote, but had, well, he lost the electoral vote, too. It was just that the Supreme Court said, here, by the way, congratulations, you're the next president. I do see the right going after Obama and somehow trying to delegitimize him. Somehow trying to obstruct and delay. And I do see maybe not an outward display of I hope he fails and hope, and not a we're going to make him a one-term president right out like they did in the past. But you know they're going to use this, and you know they're going to go after trying to delegitimize the presidency instead of doing what we need to get done. I mean, at some point, we've got to demand an infrastructure bill. We need things built. We need investment made in the country. You've got to fix the tax situation, which to me is very simple. We got a debt problem. We've got deficit problems. We've got folks who are wildly wealthy. I mean, you look at all the money that was spent on these campaigns. Sheldon Adelson's got $100 million. There's a good place to start. Use that for, well, as we've done in the past. Start creating jobs. Start getting this economy turned around. Instead of gridlock and delay, and instead of, hey, we're gonna tie things up so people hate government so much that they just drop out. And fortunately tonight, it looks like the voting numbers are gonna come in at 2008 numbers. I've seen reports maybe a bit higher, which I think is a good thing. I gotta be honest, I was kind of worried initially. A little worried that we'd have this apathy, a little worried that, you know, we'd have some folks staying home, but fortunately it looks like people are getting out. I want to take a quick break. Back with your thoughts, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425 with your thoughts.
An ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-520-7425. FIGHT17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Stanley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
We think of the planet Mars as a world much like Earth. Both worlds orbit in the inner solar system, and they're similar in size.
But Mars might have developed very soon after the birth of our solar system, while Earth is thought to have formed much later. 4.5 billion years ago, a disk of gas and dust is thought to have surrounded the early sun. Within the disk, kilometer-sized chunks of material called planetesimals collided to form the embryos of the planets we know today.
Earth is thought to have developed as late as 100 million years after the solar system began to form through a series of continued collisions. On the other hand, Mars might have stopped growing at its embryo stage only about 2 million years after the solar system began to take shape. If that's so, it would explain why Mars is the runt among inner worlds of our solar system and why its geology is profoundly different from that of Earth.
Astronomers refine the age of Mars by using carbon dating on Martian meteorites. So Earth formed through a series of collisions over tens of millions of years. But Mars may be a solitary embryo, a world that did not undergo continuous collisions. To learn more, come to EarthSky.org and search for Mars Embryo. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Yeah. You're looking for experience. You're looking for someone with a proven track record. With the climate change about man-made global warming in this country. And everybody rushed to say, oh, we need to do something now about this huge problem. I didn't change. I stood tall and said,
this is the end.
This climate science and man-made global warming was not client science. It was political science.
This is the end. My only friend, the end.
Well, I gotta tell you, it looks like a big night here in Pennsylvania so far. Looks like Kathleen Kane is gonna be the first female attorney general, also first Democrat elected to be attorney general here in Pennsylvania. Also Eugene DePasquale. It looks at this point that he's gonna wrap up the auditor general race. So, you know, a big night it looks like. It looks like Democrats came out to vote. This is still early. I'm still looking to see the results as they come in. But it looks like it could be a very positive night here in Pennsylvania anyway. Be able to push back on some of the insanity that has been the last 2 years, as we've been pointing out here on the program for that time. I'm hoping that we can push back on that. I don't know if you saw this, but earlier in the year, HSBC set aside about $700 million for fines and for penalties because it was alleged that they were laundering money for drug cartels and terrorist organizations. Well, this week, another report came out that they're going to be setting aside $800 million because, well, they may have been doing kind of the same illegal behavior. According to a Senate investigation, the bank's executives and regulators ignored warning signs and failed to stop the illegal behavior at many points between 2001 and 2010, which again is another reason why I'm happy to see that Elizabeth Warren has been elected to the U.S. Senate from Massachusetts. Bye-bye Brown, bye-bye Tea Party, bye-bye. And you look at a lot of the races around the country, referendum, I think, on the Tea Party, which just really just a tool for the wealth class, if you look at it. And you see what they've done. But, you know, again, you know, with Elizabeth Warren, one of the things I liked about her from the very beginning was that she said, look, you know, at the end of the day, we need to take aim at too big to fail. And of her top three priorities, one of them was reinstating Glass-Steagall, something that we should have done as a matter of course immediately. We need to have accountability on Wall Street. There needs to be a clear dividing line. And I'm looking forward to someone who is going to be a strong advocate for making sure that we keep an eye on what's going on Wall Street so that they never do what happened in 2008 again. Look, and the exit polls, you know, have led that way. More than half of the people who are being polled on the way out of casting their ballots are saying, look, the economy's still screwed up because of what happened during the Bush years. And we know that. And it's all part of what happened at the end of the Clinton years as well. You know, that bipartisan deal between Republicans and Democrats, Graham Leach Bliley, the Economic Modernization Act, where they said, oh, you know, the banks, they learned their lesson. They won't do that again. They won't create another Great Depression like they did the last time. They won't do that. They've learned. But Rick, they've learned. They're so much smarter now. And those derivatives, like Greenspan said, well, you know, they're such complicated financial instruments that Washington couldn't possibly, regulators couldn't possibly oversee them. They're complicated. You people just wouldn't understand. I think I understand pretty well. If they're that complicated, maybe you shouldn't have them. Just a thought. So I'm looking forward to some strong accountability and putting some real teeth into Dodd-Frank or something new. You know, the president went around saying, you know, they did Dodd-Frank. They should have done more. Glass-Steagall should have been the minimum, in my view. But the good thing is, it appears Obamacare is secure. And for me, now we start the hard work making it better. And I look at this new report by the Government Accountability Office. And this is one of those things that, you know, you go and you heard the Republicans talking about, oh, the $716 billion are stealing. And as you heard Casey say, in a very nice way, Casey said, it's a lie. I'll say it's a flat out lie, what the Republicans said during this whole election. But, you know, hey, you believe what you want. I look at what happened during the Bush years where they set up that Medicare Advantage. And the whole pay-for-service thing and all that. And I see, according to the Government Accountability Office, they see that these doctors who are self-referring patients to themselves for profits cost Medicare about $100 million a year. And this is one of those things that I said years ago was a bad idea. Because you saw it, I saw it happen right before my very eyes. You had these doctor groups who were then buying imaging centers, and they were buying surgical centers, and it was this whole, they're buying the whole operation. So, well, yeah, okay, well, you come in, you say your knee hurts, well, go get an MRI. And, oh, well, you know, there's a little meniscus tear in there. We need to go in and go over to our surgical center. Well, oh, hey, how about our physical therapy? And you end up running this mill. And I had an interesting conversation this weekend with a friend of mine who, you know, who said, well, how do we bring down the cost of health care? And I said, well, you know, the reality is we use a lot of health care and a lot of it needlessly. And I gave a couple examples of, you know, people I've talked to who live abroad. Who said, you know, like, you know, so let's say you hurt your neck and your neck's stiff. And, you know, here we go to the doctor. We want an MRI immediately. We want to know exactly what's wrong. And we want to get it fixed. And we want it done now. And we want drugs and we want the whole nine yards. In other countries, they go, okay, your neck hurts. Well, take a couple of days off of work, relax, rest. Maybe take a couple of aspirins, maybe a little massage, something like that. Let's see if your body will naturally heal itself. Cost a lot less money. A lot less profit. And you look at this report from the GAO, pretty much handing that out. Cost Medicare $100 million in 2010 alone. Because what you're seeing is, you know, it's about the profit. It's about, and that's the problem with a for-profit healthcare system. And we've talked about this, you know, at great length, which is why I am opposed to a for-profit healthcare system. Look, I want competition, and I want there to be, you know, some measure of that there. But at the end of the day, isn't it about taking care of people? My misfortune shouldn't be a Wall Street executive's profit motive. You know, we used to think that way. We used to have community hospitals. We used to have hospitals run by we the people. And you know who were running the hospitals? Doctors. People who understood healthcare. And this is my problem with all of this, all of this insurance across the country and all of this talk of vouchers and all of that. It's not run by doctors. It's run by bean counters. It's run by portfolio managers who don't know anything about taking care of people. They know how to swindle you. Oh, look at 2008. But at the end of this, I kind of look back and I go, you know, there are things that we should be doing. Medicare Advantage was a poison pill. When they passed it back during the middle of the Bush term, back 2006, I said, this is a poison pill. This is a bad idea. This is meant to destroy Social Security, and it has cost a ton of money. And you look at that $716 billion they keep throwing out there, and hello, it's the poison pill. It is doing what it was supposed to do. It's draining money out of the system, which if you wanted to kill something, you do it one of two ways. You starve it, or you make it such a bloated, inefficient system that it implodes on its own. And it's what they've done with this Medicare Advantage. So I think it was a smart thing to do. I think it's going to help. I think it's a step in the right direction. But anyway, again, you know, it looks like, as I said, it looks like Kathleen Kane will be the next Attorney General. It looks like our friend Eugene T. Pasquale is going to be the next Auditor General, which, again, you know, you look at this, the hope is they start looking into some of the things that the Corbett administration has been doing the last 2 years. You look at some of the things that Corbett didn't do during his time as Auditor General or as Attorney General. I think that's important. And you have some checks and balances. I'm looking forward to that. I'm also checking the races that we have with, looks like Matt Cartwright will have one in the 17th Congressional District. Looks like he will be the congressman from that district up in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area. Also, the Crits race out in western Pennsylvania, razor thin. I'm sure that's going to take us into the nighttime hours as well. So I'm looking forward to the numbers coming in and getting you the results as quick as we can. Quick break. Right back with the second hour of the program.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We made a promise, so we'd always remember. No retreat, baby, no return. Blood froze on a stormy night with a vow.
On his final campaign swing, President Barack Obama told thousands in Madison, Wisconsin that Mitt Romney was trying to sell old, tired ideas that have already failed. Obama said this election is about the future and is also about trust.
You know, I tell the truth. And you know that I'll fight for you and your families every single day as hard as I know how. You know that about me. And you've been there with me. And after all we've been through together, we can't give up now. Because we've got more change to do. Wisconsin, our ideas have been tested. We've tried them. They worked. The other side's ideas have also been tested. They didn't work so well. After Bill Clinton left office, during most of the last decade, we tried giving big tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans. We tried giving insurance companies and oil companies and Wall Street free reign to do whatever they please. And what do we get? Falling incomes, record deficits, the slowest job growth in half a century, an economic crisis that we've been cleaning up after ever since. So This should not be that complicated. We tried our ideas. They worked. The economy grew. We created jobs. Deficits went down. We tried their ideas. They didn't work. The economy didn't grow. Not as many jobs, and the deficit went up.
U.S. Senate candidate Tammy Baldwin said the nation has come too far to turn back now, and Wisconsin will help President Obama move the nation forward in the next 4 years.
We have come too far to turn back now and go back to the failed policies of the past. Tomorrow we have a chance to finish what we started, and I know tomorrow we will vote to continue moving Wisconsin and America forward. Forward with a strong middle class. Forward on a path to shared prosperity. And forward with President Barack Obama.
When I believe in promise.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
What was that? Did I miss something there?
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
No, evidently not. The state has already been called Obama won Pennsylvania. And it was very early on as Senator Casey has also won re-election. Good news there. From the exit polls, though, about a little over half of the voters are saying that George W. Bush shoulders more of the blame for the economic challenges that our nation face than Obama's responsible for. And again, like I said, you know, we know that. Now the question is, how do we get these folks, how do we push them in the right direction to do what has to be done? Tonight, it looks like some good news so far. I'm hoping that continues throughout the night. I've got Pennsylvania AFL-CIO President Rick Bloomingdale on the line. He is at the Casey Victory Party up in Scranton. Rick, that's in time for me.
Well, Rick, it's always a pleasure to be on the show, and this is a great night for working families and for Pennsylvania.
So how are things there at the Casey Party?
Well, you know, he's not come out yet. I think that we were a little shocked at how quickly they called the election, given that Tom Smith tried to buy the vote and spent, you know, $20 million of his own money. And this just showed that, you know, the people of Pennsylvania won't be fooled.
Yeah. You know, you look at all the money that went into this election, the Senate election, all the money that went into the presidential election. I got to be honest, there's got to be a better way to spend $7 billion than what we've done so far.
Well, I can certainly think of some bridges and roads that need repaired. And, you know, they might have gotten more bang for their buck had they invested in putting some people back to work instead of just trying to lie to the people on television and on the radio. It just didn't work. They spent a lot of money trying to mislead the American people, and the American, at least the Pennsylvania folks, like you said, it hasn't been called nationwide yet, but at least folks in Pennsylvania saw through the BS, actually, the malarkey, to quote Joe Biden, saw through the malarkey and voted for the people that are going to fight for them.
Yeah, saw through the stuff, if you will.
Yes, the stuff.
But, you know, here and what happened here in Pennsylvania with the Casey victory and the Obama winning the state is a testament to what you and those in organized labor have done across the state, the mobilization that's gone on. The question I have is from this point forward, now the hard work begins. How do we hold these folks to the fire? How do we make sure that we begin to rebuild and push back against the rights agenda?
But, you know, that's absolutely the right question, because, you know, they're going to come out and they're going to say there was, oh, it was Sandy, it was this, it was that, there was no mandate. You know, if Bob Casey's numbers hold, when he got outspent $20 million to $12 million, if his numbers hold and he wins by 6 or 7 points, that's a clear mandate for Senator Casey message of fighting for the middle class, fighting against bad trade deals. And we've got to make sure that the right wing takes a look at how badly they got beaten, and that it was there. It wasn't Sandy. It wasn't, we had a great ground game, but they have a good ground game too. It was their failed ideology that the people saw through, that the people rejected here in Pennsylvania.
So,
because if it was just about money and ground, then Tom Smith should have won. But it was a failed ideology.
So on the state level, you know, now we've seen the last 2 years, the assaults that have gone on across the country, in states across the country, and here in Pennsylvania as well. You know, we know next year the pension fight will come up. They're going to go after prevailing wage again. The whole assault on public sector workers are going to continue. What's the push? What's the challenge going forward from this point?
Well, the push has got to be that we get out there and continue to educate our members and continue to push against the right wing's agenda. This has got to be about what's right for working and the working people in Pennsylvania and the middle class. And we've got to tell them that, look, your ideology of trickle down economics, your ideology of trying to make people poorer, which is when you take pensions away, that's what you're doing. You're trying to impoverish people. But that is a failed agenda. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the state, there's some more friends of workers elected to the state house. Both our Republican friends are reelected, as well as our some good Democratic friends. And, you know, guys like Mike Turzai, who made that goofy statement that voter ID is going to make sure that Mitt Romney wins. Obviously, that wasn't true. But, you know, he's going to, you know, he may or may not be in power, but we got to send him a message that your ideology is what cost you guys this election. Because you had all the money, and it wasn't enough to fool the people of Pennsylvania. The people of Pennsylvania saw through it.
Yeah, do you think what's going on is a referendum of the last 2 years? I mean, the gridlock, the delay, you know, the fact that the Republicans came in 2010, said it was about jobs, yet I've seen nothing that would create jobs. I've seen a lot of gridlock. I've seen a lot of delay. On the state level, I saw the unconstitutional redistricting. I saw the voter suppression. I saw Act 13 that would destroy local control. I saw a lot of things not so positive, but nothing on the jobs front.
That's absolutely right. And they're right. It should have been about jobs. It should have been about putting people back to work at good wages with good benefits, a pension, and a way to build a middle-class lifestyle. Instead, they went after people's benefits, their way. They went after prevailing wage. Again, an attempt to impoverish people, not to lift people into the middle class. And that's what those kind of things like prevailing wage do. They give people who are skilled a decent way. We want to use our tax dollars to put people to work, to pay people a decent wage. We don't want a lot of tax dollars used to impoverish people.
Right.
That's nuts. We want our tax dollars used to hire the best qualified people at a reasonable rate.
And also
so
help the local economy as well. Let me ask you, you guys have done it all. The Pennsylvania AFL-CIO has done a lot on the voter suppression, as has numerous labor unions across the state. You know, I look at what's going on, the stories that are coming out of Philadelphia about people being thrown off the rolls, about people with being forced to vote with provisional ballots, all kind of shenanigans going on. Tomorrow when we wake up, what's going to be the push to try and rectify those problems for next time?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people decided that if your ideas are no good, the only way we retain power is to keep people from voting. They did try every trick in the book, and it just didn't work, right? I mean, even if people had to vote provisional ballots, those ballots will still eventually be counted. They tried to, you know, and a lot of these, a lot of the voter rolls are, maintained by the counties, and if they did purges and those kind of things where they lost addresses, and there was a lot of that going on. There's a lot of, some of it intentional, I think, some of it just bad organizing. But you did have some things that out there at the polling places that shouldn't have been happening. Signs that looked official that said voter ID required. Absolutely baloney. And there were some real attempts out there to try to suppress the vote.
Yeah, one of the signs I saw out in front of one of the polling places on the parking meter said no Democrats allowed. I guess you got to give somebody credit for creativity, but at the end of the day, still wrong.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, again, it's all about, you know, do you want people to vote? And, you know, it would be great if 100% of the people voted and then made the best candidate win, right? Let's put our ideas out there,
yep. See
what the people want.
Last question.
Go ahead.
Last question I got for you, let you back to the party there with Senator Casey. You know, I want to get your thoughts on Chrysler. Evidently, they gave their workers the day off today, or you could say that the workers earned the day off because, look, the company's very profitable because of the work those folks do. Just wanted to get your thoughts on Chrysler giving them the day off to vote.
Well, you know, voting is such an important part of the American history and tradition. Having a day off would really increase turnout and make people realize, I think, or cause people to realize how important these elections really are. I think it's a great tradition that Chrysler started. It'd be great if we could have Election Day be a national holiday.
I'm right there with you. That's where I wanted to go with it. Rick, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. Have a great night tonight at the party.
All right. Thanks, Rick. It's always good to be on the show.
Thanks so much, Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. You know, look, at the end of it, this should be a national holiday, something we should be pushing for, and Chrysler should be given credit for saying, hey, you know what? Get out there and vote. It should be a moment of national pride. It should be something every company should do, not because they have to, but because it's the right thing to do. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
For a rich example of unbridled boss power in today's political process, hearken back to August when Mitt Romney appeared on a stage with a group of Ohio coal miners behind him. I tell you, the clueless candidate cheerfully exclaimed, you've got a great boss. That would be Robert Murray, CEO of Murray Energy, who had previously held a $1.7 million fundraiser for Romney. But if Mitt had just turned around and seen the scowls on the faces of the Murray miners, he would have had a clue that they didn't quite share his enthusiasm for their great boss. One reason is that they hadn't volunteered to be there, but had been directed by bossman Bob to attend. Also, Bob was docking them a day's pay for taking the day off to be stage props for Mitt's campaign. In effect, they were compelled to donate to the Republican. Such involuntary support is routine for this corporation's salaried employees who've been hit up again and again for donations to Romney and other designated candidates. Murray himself sends dunning letters to employees' homes, specifying to each one how much to give and instructing them to send their checks directly to corporate headquarters. Staffers there maintain a list of those who did as told and those who didn't. If you don't contribute, your job's at stake, one employee bluntly explained. Indeed, Murray deploys his lieutenants to squeeze the laggards. As the boss put it in one letter to them last year, please see that our salaried employees step up for their own sakes. In another letter this March, he even named names of those he considered shirkers. I do not recall ever seeing the attached list of employees at one of our fundraisers, he said pointedly. This is Jim Hightower saying, after Romney's great boss statement, he added that Murray, quote, runs a great operation here. Yeah, a political shakedown operation sanctioned by the Supreme Court.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
He is now turning me into an unofficial Southerner, and I'm learning to say y'all, and I like grits, and strange things are happening to me.
Yeah, strange things are happening, all right. Yeah. I'm going to go back to his subterranean parking garage. Play with his cars, because he loves cars. He's a car guy. And good, he can go play with his cars. What I want to know is how Joe Walsh is doing out in Illinois, hoping the deadbeat goes down. It looks like in Indiana, the seat went to the Democrats, a very red state. This is kind of a surprise. I said the other day I thought it was going to happen. It looks like it has happened. The Lugar seat, which was lost in the primary, is now, a pickup for the Democrats, and it looks like they're going to hold on to the Senate. I've got Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service, on the line. He is in Chicago at OFA headquarters there in Chicago with the folks at the Obama campaign. Justin, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, it's great to be here.
How are things in the Windy City?
Initially there was sort of an era of nervousness, and that has evaporated as a lot of these results have come in. We saw our first raucous moment of the evening come in immediately when they called Michigan for Obama, and again when they called Pennsylvania for Obama, which is, two pretty big moves that sort of put the nails in the coffin for Romney with the sort of backup strategy that he had to go in there at the last minute and try to rally some voters behind him. And really what was a desperate grab. You also mentioned the Illinois race, and I am hearing from people on the ground here that is going to be called for Duckworth, and that we are not going to see Walsh in the race anymore, which is a pretty interesting race considering how heated that got and how obnoxious Walsh was with a lot of the comments. But it looks like a lot of Illinois voters really went out against that in large numbers.
Yeah, that's good news. And I look at the Indiana race. I mean, that seat has really no reason to be a Democratic seat other than Murdoch just ran a horrible campaign.
I mean, Murdoch, he did run a bad campaign, but it really didn't go, up in smoke until the last minute, which was kind of shocking. We saw how quickly that rate come really got under a lot of voters' skins and really changed it at the last minute. We saw Murdoch cruising into it a neck-and-neck race and edging out towards what was considered to be a pretty easy victory. And then in just a moment, we saw that all disappear. And tonight, it looks like, the shift to the right that Indiana apparently took just evaporated. They lost a huge moderate that probably could have held onto a seat, could have kept the state in the column for the Republicans. And they moved it away. And it really speaks volumes about the strategy that the Republican Party needs to pursue in the future, namely that they can no longer just sort of go for the extreme wing and hope that it all goes for the best.
Yeah, as things are going tonight, are they going the way you had thought, you had envisioned they were going to go?
I mean, this evening, yeah. I mean, we're seeing essentially, all these public opinion polls that we've seen in the past few months really being played out in real time at sort of an alarming rate. So far we haven't seen any huge surprises. And that is bad news for the Romney campaign. There was, an expectation that the polls really did not consider the huge anti-Obama sentiment, and that does not look like to be the case tonight. If there is a silver lining for the Romney campaign, he may win the popular vote, and we may see the GOP delegitimize the president even more so than they already have. At the end of it, at least, it does not look like we are going to be hearing from Romney anytime again soon. It looks like his political obituary has already been written.
Yeah, well, his wife said this is the end of it. He's not allowed to do it anymore, and when Mama speaks, that's the end of it, I guess.
And really, I mean, I can't envision what else he plans to do after this, which is kind of sad in a way. He is not a loved figure in the Republican Party. I can't really see him going and starting an institute like Santorum did or trying to be a public figure like Herman Cain sort of tried to do afterwards. He doesn't have any legislative career to fall back on. And if he wants to enter the private sector again, I don't know why he would, considering he has enough money for, guys like us to live multiple lifetimes.
Yeah.
So I really just think this is probably going to be the last we're going to hear of Mitt Romney, unless there's some crazy stuff happens this evening. And, it really is sort of a sad thought. You know, this person that we've gotten to know since 2007 is now just going to be a political footnote.
Well, I got to be honest. I don't feel too bad for him because, as you pointed out, he is extraordinarily wealthy. He will be just fine.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, it's got to hurt his pride. And, you know, I have a small sliver of sympathy for him, even though he was pretty disrespectful towards 47% of the country.
So as you're there at the event, what are people saying about tomorrow? I mean, you know, because, look, I mean, the Senate's going to stay in the hands of the Democrats. The House is going to stay in the hands of Republicans. What are the folks there saying? How are we going to get anything accomplished with the same basic scenario we've had for the past 2 years?
That's going to be the major question, especially since there's so much work that needs to be done in the lame duck session, you know. There's the fiscal cliff. There's sequestration. There's quite a bit of stuff going on. And, you know, it doesn't look like some of the president's top priorities are going to move forward. You know, we've already seen a pretty defiant tone coming out from Eric Cantor and coming out from a lot of House Republicans saying that they are going to continue to block anything that has to do with raising taxes on millionaires, even though that really is sort of a key step to take to return us to any sort of fiscal sanity.
So while you're there in Chicago, have there been any stories of voter suppression? Here in Philadelphia, fake news on Fox went crazy because there was a black guy standing out in front of a polling place, and he was standing guard because he was one of those new Black Party Panther people, and he was intimidating because he was opening doors for old ladies.
No, I have not seen anything about that yet from here. I have not been out to many of the polling places considering it was sort of a foregone conclusion that Obama was going to be winning in Illinois. But in terms of seeing the town, I did get to check in with some phone bank volunteers today. They seemed to be in pretty high spirits and were ready to deliver it home. They were making many calls out to Wisconsin. Yeah, it's been basically the mood on the ground here that I've seen. If there is voter suppression, they would have to get quite a bit of it in order for Chicago to move to the right in any sense of the imagination.
Yeah, good point. Were you there when President Obama made the phone banking calls? He evidently made six calls yesterday.
I was not. That was kept under pretty tight wraps. I did do a fair portion of the day trying to hunt him down. I at one point went to the basketball arena that I thought he was going to be playing at, but no dice, such as the role of, somebody's just on the streets as a reporter.
Yeah. Well, Justin, I appreciate the update. Thanks so much, and have a great night.
Hey, you have a good one.
All right. Thanks so much, Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service. And again, can you imagine? You pick up the phone. Hi, this is President Obama. Would you believe it? I don't think that I would. Some interesting things going on around the country. Minnesota Public Radio reported today that voters in Minnesota are encouraging political messages about the proposed constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage in churches that are serving as polling places. One church had a banner that read, "Strengthen marriage, don't redefine it." But a church official has confirmed that it has been removed. And again, you know, you go, when I walked into my polling place, said no campaigning beyond this point. Kind of makes you wonder, it made me think of the letter that Obama had written to a 10-year-old girl, thanking him for supporting marriage equality. Turns out that this 10-year-old girl has two fathers, and she goes, "Look, you know, the kids at school give her a hard time because it's gross and weird," and she asked him, "You know, if you were me and you had two dads that love each other, And the kids were teasing you about it, what would you do?" And he replied to her by saying, "You know, the great thing about this country, that no two families look the same. We celebrate this diversity," he wrote. "And we recognize that whether you have two dads or one mom, what matters above all is the love we show one another." He said, "You are fortunate to have two parents who care deeply for you. They are lucky to have such an exceptional daughter in you." He said, "Our differences unite us. You and I are blessed to live in a country where we are born equal, no matter what we look like on the outside, where we grow up, or who our parents are." And he said, "You know, the thing my mother always told me," he said, "a good rule is to treat others the way you hope that they will treat you. Remind your friends at school about this rule, and if they say something that hurts your feelings, remind them." And, you know, I look at this, and, you know, we used to think that way. And our friends on the extreme right, I think they've forgotten. Something maybe we should remind them. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get an update from what's going on in Philadelphia from our good friend Abe Amaro. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Farm no more.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
We think of the planet Mars as a world much like Earth. Both worlds orbit in the inner solar system, and they're similar in size.
But Mars might have developed very soon after the birth of our solar system, while Earth is thought to have formed much later. 4.5 billion years ago, a disk of gas and dust is thought to have surrounded the early Sun. Within the disk, kilometer-sized chunks of material called planetesimals collided to form the embryos of the planets we know today.
Earth is thought to have developed as late as 100 million years after the solar system began to form through a series of continued collisions. On the other hand, Mars might have stopped growing at its embryo stage only about 2 million years after the solar system began to take shape. If that's so, it would explain why Mars is the runt among inner worlds of our solar system and why its geology is profoundly different from that of Earth.
Astronomers refined the age of Mars by using carbon dating on Martian meteorites. So Earth formed through a series of collisions over tens of millions of years. But Mars may be a solitary embryo, a world that did not undergo continuous collisions. To learn more, come to earthsky.org and search for Mars Embryo. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
John, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Well, I'm sure the ring of fire is burning as we speak in the Romney camp. Not very happy about what's going on so far. It looks very promising for Obama. But, you know, I go back to yesterday, and, you know, you got to wonder what Bain Capital was thinking the day they decided we're going to close down Sensata Technology the day before the election so that those 170 people who were kicking to the curb to move their jobs to China, they have to file unemployment after they go vote. I would probably guarantee that those were 170 votes there in Illinois that didn't go for mittens. But let's find out what's going on in Philadelphia. Lots of reports of people being forced to cast provisional ballots. Lots of reports of just bizarre stuff going on. And, of course, the fake news on Fox story, the big story, the angry-looking black man opening doors for people who are going to vote, the new Black Panther Party guy opening doors. Abe Amaros, thanks for taking time for me.
You are more than welcome, Rick. Good evening.
Good news so far. I'm pretty happy about looks like Kathleen Kane is going to win the attorney general's race. Looks like Eugene DePasquale going to be the next auditor general. Looks like a good night.
Absolutely. This was a huge victory, not just for Democrats, but working families across the Commonwealth. And, you know, Rick, I want to get back to your point. I was with my good friend and mentor, Juan Ramos of the Laborers, in Philadelphia for the last days, And, yes, we ran into some glitches today in terms of the poll workers asking for voter identification, and we had some snafus that were thankfully cleared up. And, of course, you got to go back to that new Black Panther nonsense. A gentleman from the Committee of 70 was dispatched over there. A city worker was dispatched, and there was no one to be found from the new Black Panthers. Desperation amok everywhere. And the ultimate in absurdity, Rick, is where a mural of President Obama inside Benjamin Franklin Elementary School in North Philadelphia had to be covered up because Republican Chairman Rob Gleason took the matter to court. Talk about desperation and absolute nonsense. And I am glad that the numbers in Philadelphia came out so heavily for Democrats. And again, a big victory for working families.
Yeah, well, all I got is one thing to say.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Done. Done, Abe. It's done.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
That's right. Done. In the opposite direction. I got to tell you, Rick, I mean, we are all exhausted, but very pleased with the results and the outcome. And, you know, I understand that we're going to pick up a couple state Senate seats as well. I have not seen the map in terms of House races yet, but I'm hoping that we pick up a couple in the Democratic column as well.
Yeah, it looks like Rob Teplitz is going to take the 15th Senate seat. Happy about that. He's been a friend of the program. Something that I'm following, Joe Pitts in the Congressional 17th looks at this point right now to be getting thumped. 19,000 to 8,000 votes. He's getting thumped.
Rick, this is astonishing to me, and I'm sure that the Republicans now are really rethinking the fact that they put the city of Reading and the city of Lancaster in the same congressional district. And kudos to those voters who came out in droves today to give Pitts the thumbs down. I mean, he has never been a friend of labor, never been a friend of working families, rather aloof and not responsive. I mean, even when we tried to get meetings with him and his staff, I mean, just no response whatsoever. None. And so he gets what he deserves, and I hope that the numbers stay solid.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and that's a thumping. I mean, 67 to 28, that's a thumping for an incumbent.
That's right.
And a well-deserved one, because he just looked, to me, he always looked like an old curmudgeon anyway.
That's right, Rick.
But the question now becomes, so far having a good night, what about tomorrow? How do we keep this momentum going tomorrow? How do we make sure that all of the ugliness that has been the last 2 years of Republican rule is stopped, and we start talking about how we get this economy moving? How do we start creating jobs? How do we build the middle class again?
That's right. Listen, what we need to do really is go back to basics and start talking about manufacturing. Start talking about job creation and really start riding that wave of the economy picking up a little momentum and a little bit of steam. Now, tonight's victory by the president is going to allow everybody to really reshape the message, and that is things are getting better. And, yes, it's not perfect, but we are headed in a positive direction. And, again, I mean, I'm glad that you talked about those workers who were laid off and went to file unemployment compensation after they went to vote. I mean, those 170 votes in Ohio, I mean, my heart goes out to those families and those workers, because what we're seeing now is we have to totally retool our economy and really start talking more about manufacturing and you know, forget about investing abroad in jobs and sending jobs abroad. We really need to focus now more on the American worker. The middle class is back, and the middle class is angry and is not going to take or tolerate going back to those failed policies of that the Republicans tout. That's what we have to do from day one, starting tomorrow. And we're going to have 2013. We have elections in the judiciary, but now we're really going to have to focus on who's going to be the next governor of Pennsylvania, because the this was not a good night for Governor Tom Corbett either, Rick.
No, and that's, you know, as I've been saying, this is maybe an opportunity to add a little balance and to have eye over to oversee what's going on. Now you're going to have an attorney general that may look into some of the shenanigans that went on during the Sandusky thing. Maybe you're going to have an auditor general who's going to go, hey, you know, you're gutting all this money from education. Where is it going? Hold these charter schools accountable. I'm excited about what the next couple of years are going to hold.
Absolutely, as am I. I mean, I probably won't sleep much tonight because I'm so enthusiastic about what the future holds for us as working families in Pennsylvania.
So let me ask you, as tomorrow morning when you wake up, what's the work day going to be? Because, in the state house anyway, it looks like you're going to probably pick up a couple of seats, but the Republicans are still going to have control. They're still going to push to destroy public sector pensions. They're still going to push the same agenda to go after prevailing wage and maybe even, who knows, the no rights at work agenda that they've been pursuing the last 2 years.
I'm glad you brought that up, Rick, because quite frankly, what this is going to do is there are some labor-friendly Republicans who are now going to be a little more emboldened, knowing that they are not going to have bullseyes and targets on their backs because the Democratic side has just gotten a little bit stronger. And so there are those out there that we've been talking to who have not been tested yet but tell us that they're labor-friendly Republicans. So maybe that'll tamper Mr. Terzai's appetite to go after prevailing wage. To push that nonsensical right to work garbage that they want to push out there, and anything that stops project labor agreements in its tracks as well. So I am really interested to see what that map is going to look like tomorrow, because numbers don't lie, and it may embolden some of our labor friendly Republicans to stick their necks out a little bit further for working families, particularly those in the Southeast.
That's an excellent point. And the hope is, and what I've been saying for the last couple of years is, look, Republicans, take your party back. What's gone on for too long is the Republicans have become the party of insanity. They've allowed the fringe to be the majority. And at some point, and maybe today's part of it, maybe today's the beginning, as you pointed out, of return to some sanity.
That's right, Rick. I mean, the Tea Party has taken over the Republican Party, to its detriment. While I don't wish the Republican Party many successes, I do hope that they get rid of those extremists who are absolutely off the charts and unreasonable, people you just can't work with.
Well, it's looking right now as Joe Walsh, the Tea Party favorite there in Illinois, the deadbeat dad there, it looks like he's going to go down.
Well, and that's justifiable. You know, that guy has been nothing but the poster child for the party of no. And he is getting his just rewards tonight.
Sadly, though, it looks like Alan West and Patrick Murphy down in Florida's 18th district, neck and neck. They're separated by about 1,500 votes at this point.
Wow. Well, let's hope for the best on that one.
There you go. Ava, I appreciate the time. Best of luck down there in Philadelphia. Have a great night and be safe.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks
Likewise.
So much.
Take care.
Great talking to you.
All right.
Look, the reality is, and I think he made an important point there, which is, coming back to some solid middle-class values, both sides. And, I go back and I talk about Eisenhower quite often. You remember the what he wrote his brother, anybody who would come out against labor unions and unemployment and the farm bill and Social Security, those people, well, they wouldn't be heard from again. Not in their political history. But he said there are a few, there are a couple, but their numbers are negligible, they're stupid. And the sad reality is, for this brief amount of time, stupid is running that party. The hope is that they go and they take a look and they say, we've been stupid. Time to expel that. And I remember the Lindsey Graham quote from last night, who said, we're losing 93% of the African American vote. We've lost the Hispanic vote, lost the 18 to 29 vote, lost it. Not because we weren't hard-assed enough. It's the reason Romney's going to lose this. Because, he tried to be that ultra-conservative. I said from the beginning, if he was the guy who ran for governor in Massachusetts, if he was moderate Mitt from the beginning and he wasn't all over every issue, if he wasn't Mitt 360, I think he'd have had a better shot. But, in order to get through the primary, insanity had to rule. So far, I'm still looking forward to the numbers coming in. It looks like I said, Tammy Duckworth has beaten Joe Walsh. That race has been called. The balance of power in the House still looks to be favoring the Republicans at this hour. We'll keep you up to date as more of the races come in. It looks as though the Senate, you know, right now the Senate, 44 Democrats to 42 Republicans, still a number of seats up for grabs there. Like I said, Murdoch lost in Indiana. That has already been called. It looks like, from the reports that I've seen, it looks like Tammy Baldwin is going to win Wisconsin. We'll talk to someone from her camp a little bit later, from her victory party a little bit later on in the program. All in all, seems to be moving in the right direction. But like I've been saying, now we've got real problems to deal with. Now the hope is that the Republicans come back to the table and say, okay, let's work through some of the stuff that needs to get done. For me, first and foremost, get that tax bill done. Make sure we don't raise taxes on 98% of the people in this country. Make sure that folks keep the money in their pocket to keep in the economy. And then do some investing. Invest in infrastructure. Get people back to work. You know, if you listen to Romney during this campaign, he was talking stimulus. He was talking big stimulus. Huge, huge stimulus. Just didn't couch it in those terms. So whatever we have to do to say, okay, well, we need to invest in the country. We need roads and bridges because, well, you know, we need bombs moved around again. Well, we can make that argument again if we have to. Let's do it. We need broadband access across this nation. We need to make sure that we're not, during the Bush years, we were 10th, which according to Bush, we were 10 spots too low. Now I think we've fallen to something like 15th or 17th, which again, according to Bush, would be 15 or 17 spots too low. And yes, that would make us zero, I know. But if we need to couch that in terms of national defense, we need to do that. I mean, there's so much that needs to be done. And the hope is that tomorrow morning when we wake up from all of this and all of this stuff gets sorted out, you get people who are willing to get to the table and say, you know what, we need to get to work. Been screwing around for the last 2 years. We need to get things done. We need to get people back to work. All of the campaign rhetoric, it's all been done. It's all been decided. All of that money that was spent and wasted, hopefully somebody in Congress goes, you know what, that was obscene. We need to do something about campaign finance. At least that's my hope. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
All about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
There is an issue on the flip-flops as it relates to trust. I don't know that he'd go on to be President Obama, given his record. I mean, when there is a question about whether you're running for the White House or running for the Waffle House, you've got a real problem with the American people.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. You look at today and, you know, you think about voting, and some folks think, well, you know, I'll go vote. I've got a friend of mine. Maybe I'll go, maybe I won't. I saw these two stories today, an elderly guy in Michigan, basically almost dead. Somebody, a 48-year-old home registered care aide, had to come over, give him CPR to bring him back to life. And the first question the guy asks when he comes back to life and his heart starts beating, did I get the vote? Did I cast my ballot? I mean, the guy was dead. No heartbeat, no breathing. He wants to know if he was able to vote. First question, did I vote? Woman in labor, on her way to ER. She goes, no, I got to stop. I got to stop it. I've got to vote while in labor. These are people who, do you think these are people who wanted to see Mitt Romney? I don't think so. Anyway, I've got Mike Fedor, chairman of the Cumberland County Democratic Party, on the line. Mike, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem, Rick. Good evening.
This morning you sent out an email to all the faithful. Today is our day, you wrote. It's looking pretty good.
Yeah, it is. You know, the state of Pennsylvania was called some time ago for the president. I think that's a trend that is going to bode well for his reelection. And excited to see Bob Casey reelected to the United States Senate, and then thrilled to see that Kathleen Kane is going to be our first female attorney general and first Democrat to hold the post since it became elected. And we worked hard in Cumberland County today to get to vote out in support of those candidates.
Yeah, it looks like Eugene D. Pasquale he's going to become the auditor general as well if numbers hold the way they look right now. I got one thing I wanted to get a reaction from you on. Just one quick thing.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Thoughts?
Wow. So, you know, when I was handling calls today and text messages, problems that we were facing in voting, 99% of them were about voter ID law. And the fact that, you know, significant numbers of judges of elections continue to not only ask for the ID but insist on it, despite the ruling of the Commonwealth Court. So, you know, we're excited to see a legislature that's going to be seated to take a look at this issue. I think we can't just be allowing this law to go forward. It has created tremendous, tremendous problems at the polls today, and it's clear to me that it's just a tactic to disenfranchise and to intimidate voters. It's not actually about the integrity of the election.
Yeah, so, well, if that were the case, if they really were concerned about the integrity of the election, there'd be a whole lot of other things they'd be looking at as well. The door thing that was hanging on the doorknob that said your polling place is somewhere else, you know, that kind of stuff we'd be looking at as well.
Yeah, you know, I've been saying for some time now that we actually should be looking to make voting easier in Pennsylvania, not more difficult. We have some of the most stringent and most difficult barriers to voting of any state in the union. You know, we do not have same-day registration. We do not have online registration as it exists right now. we have significant barriers still to the voting procedure. We have 67 different voting ways of voting, different voting machines in the Commonwealth. So a lot of work to get done. And, you know, I think we should be talking about a progressive agenda that moves the state forward into the 21st century in terms of its voting, not trying to move us back into the 1860s in terms of you know, poll taxes and other things that are just going to create barriers to voting.
So
we had some really strong turnout today in Cumberland County. Some of the precincts were topping 70%. We were excited to see the turnout in Shippensburg Township, because, you know, that's a brand new polling location that a group of students fought hard to get so that they could have ease of access to the polls. That seemed to go well today down there for them, Shippensburg, and Dickinson College in Carlisle. They had a very strong turnout. No problems at all, really, today at Carlisle 4-2. So the work continues, though.
So tomorrow when you wake up and you look at what you've accomplished and you look at all the things, all the good stuff that's going on, where do you go from here? I mean, hopefully it doesn't end today. Hopefully this is just the beginning of moving forward for tomorrow and beyond.
Absolutely. I'm going to take one day to rest. And then until we have some work to do in Cumberland County, we spent about the last year working on kind of looking at our county party, seeing ways we could diversify the leadership and bring some new ideas to the table. We've been trying to get engaging the community in a much stronger way in terms of social media and our, you know, building our brand and our support. But you're right. The next thing for us is election 2013. We have more than 150 races up for election in Cumberland County alone next year. So my job starting Wednesday will be finding candidates, qualified candidates who are interested in running for school board, township supervisor, borough council, mayor. These are some of the most important races, and actually can be some opportunity for our party to win some races too. Because, you know, a couple hundred votes can get you on school board. It's not too hard to do.
Yep.
Just got to take some time and some commitment to knock on doors and talk to people and have a compelling and clear message about your values. I think we can do it. I think we just need a concerted way to do it in Cumberland County. And that's going to be my job as county chair, is to get us all on board and competing in those races, because it's so important that we have strong Democrats on school boards and townships and boroughs making the right investments in our communities.
Well, I mean, you know, we get a lot of people, and you've said, like you've said, a lot of folks got to the polls today, and, you know, these are the big races. These are the ones who people get really excited about. But it's those, like you said, the school board, the local borough townships, the supervisors' jobs, all of those things. Those are the things that really affect my day-to-day life, much more than who's sitting in the White House.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I had some Democrats approach me in the last couple of weeks wanting to know why we had a couple uncontested races where we had no Democratic candidate. And, you know, the answer is we haven't been building a bench for some time. You haven't really been out recruiting strong local candidates that could gain experience and think about if they do a great job on school board, if they do a great job on borough council, moving up and seeking a seat in the General Assembly. So the way we get there is first by winning some local elections. And I tell people all the time, if we want to have competitive races again in Cumberland County and go back, you know, 15 years, we had two Democratic state reps in Cumberland County. Those we can get there again, but we have to consciously build in the community level, and as you said, that all starts on Wednesday. But let's not close the book on tonight yet. We still got some more results that'll come in, and I'm excited if Eugene DePasquale pulls it out like I think he will. We're gonna have a really great Central Pennsylvania guy out there fighting for us as our Auditor General, and Corbett's going to have a lot on his hands, a lot on his plate, it seems, with the great, outstanding team of DePasquale, McCord, and Kane elected statewide.
Yeah, well, the hope is that, you know, some of the ugliness stops and we start talking about how we move the state forward. You know, they've got a Transportation Commission study sitting on mothballs that still hasn't been done. We've still got roads and bridges that need to be rebuilt. We've got so many things that need to be done, yet what we've done for the last 2 years is pass a resolution, 2012, the year of the Bible, which I guess is all right. You know, because I'm praying more. I pray I get from one side of the bridge to the other. But, you know, the hope is we start focusing on some of our real needs.
Yeah, you know, I feel like for the past, you know, 18 months, everyone's been in a holding pattern, is watching this presidential election to get some sense of where the nation is going to go. it's clear to me where the nation wants to go. It wants to continue to move forward with the president, continue to move forward with, you know, investing in this country. And I think it's going to start right away here in Pennsylvania. And that means, you know, expanding the middle class by making some investments in infrastructure, job, you know, investments that will create good working family supporting jobs with benefits and with safety protections on the job. And and you know, hopefully we'll get into some debates this winter about growing this economy, not just trying to take away and steal from people who've worked so hard and devoted their lives to public service. So we've got some fights on our hands, and in Cumberland County we're going to be working hard to make sure that the Democrats who got involved in this election just don't disappear into the ether, that they stay involved and they get involved in educating the community about some of these local issues, and you know, staying engaged with letters to the editor, lobbying efforts, whatever it takes to keep our voice and our values alive in Harrisburg.
Yep. Mike Fedora, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
You too, Rick. Keep it up. You're doing an outstanding job, and looking forward to some more results here in the next probably 30 minutes. We should know more.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Mike, thanks so much. I appreciate the time, brother.
You bet, Rick. Take care.
It looks like Claire McCaskill has been deemed the winner out there in Missouri. Aiken has gone down. It looks like the legitimate rape comment, well, not very helpful for him. And, you know, really, I mean, this is it any surprise? So, again, it looks like as the Senate situation clears up a little bit, looks like there's a good shot. It looks like there is a good shot that the Democrats are going to hold the Senate. Right now it's 45-42 with a number still up. The Democrats have picked up 3 seats. Republicans have lost those 3. So it's a net loss so far for the Republicans of 3. Could they add? It'll be quite interesting to see where this goes. You know, one of the things that Mike brought up, and I think is extremely important, are those local races. And, you know, I often say to folks, you know, run for school board. Don't just sit there and complain. Go run for borough council. Run for these different, you know, local gigs. You know, it's one thing to stand there and complain. It's another thing to do something about it. And those are the places, those are the offices that really affect you daily. You know, it's one thing to complain and, oh, that president and all that Senate. You know, it's the local school board. It's the local tax assessor. It's the local this. It's the local that. That's what's important. And I hope, and you know, he's right. You need to build that bench so that you have the ability to get folks into the next level. So interesting. I'm still looking at the results. Again, you know, they seem to be holding fairly steady in the statewide races. Still holding in the 16th congressional district. It looks like Joe Pitts is well. Looks like he's going to go down. And part of this is the redistricting. You know, the Republicans didn't do him any favors. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with the third hour. Stick around.
We got to do it today. No more madness and cruel. No more history. We got to get old tonight.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We made a promise, so we'd always remember. No retreat, baby, no surrender. Blood brothers on a stormy night with a vow.
On his final campaign swing, President Barack Obama told thousands in Madison, Wisconsin that Mitt Romney is trying to sell old, tired ideas that have already failed. Obama said this election is about the future and is also about trust.
You know I tell the truth. And you know that I'll fight for you and your families every single day as hard as I know how. You know that about me. And you've been there with me. And after all we've been through together, we can't give up now. Because we've got more change to do. Wisconsin, our ideas have been tested. We've tried them. They worked. The other side's ideas have also been tested. They didn't work so well. After Bill Clinton left office, during most of the last decade, we tried giving big tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans. We tried giving insurance companies and oil companies and Wall Street free rein to do whatever they pleased. And what did we get? Falling incomes, record deficits, the slowest job growth in half a century, an economic crisis that we've been cleaning up after ever since. So this should not be that complicated. We tried our ideas. They worked. The economy grew. We created jobs. Deficits went down. We tried their ideas. They didn't work. The economy didn't grow. Not as many jobs, and the deficit went up.
U.S. Senate candidate Tammy Baldwin said the nation has come too far to turn back now, and Wisconsin will help President Obama move the nation forward in the next 4 years.
We have come too far to turn back now and go back to the failed policies of the past. Tomorrow we have a chance to finish what we started. And I know tomorrow we will vote to continue moving Wisconsin and America forward. Forward with a strong middle class. Forward on a path to shared prosperity. And forward with President Barack Obama.
When I believe in promise land.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I love this country. I should love this state. It just feels good being back in Michigan. You know, the trees are the right height. The streets are just right.
There is trouble in the forest, and the creatures are happening as the maple stream of passion and the oaks are shaking.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So you, more of these robocalls going around. You look in Florida, for instance. More of the, hey, you know, tomorrow, Wednesday is the vote. Make sure anytime until 7 p.m. On Wednesday you can vote. Go ahead. You know, Wednesday, make sure you vote. And you look at this and you go, was it an honest mistake or was this done deliberately? And you look at some of the shenanigans that's going on. You kind of got to wonder. Let's find out what's going on out in Colorado. Benny Martinez, Talk Radio News Service, is out in Colorado. Benny, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
What's going on out in the Rocky Mountain State?
Well, as expected, Colorado's been a tight race leading up to the election. Tonight's no different. The president right now with 30% of precincts reporting, leading by a slim margin here. It's a 50-47% margin for the president. Like I said, 30% of precincts reporting. But one of the more popular things about Colorado during this election season is, in fact, Amendment 64, which is the state constitutional amendment included on this ballot that essentially would legalize marijuana for businesses to sell and for people to own. Early with 30%, like I said, reporting, it seems as though that provision is winning support with about 53% voting yes, 47% voting no thus far. That's with 1.5 million votes already counted. This is according to the Colorado Secretary of State's office. So, you know, if the night continues to go as is, we might see legalized marijuana in Colorado.
Yeah, but isn't that a problem when you look at the federal law?
It's interesting because, you know, Colorado is one of the few states that actually allows medicinal marijuana, and there are several dispensaries around the area of Denver where I was at today talking to people on the ground. A lot of people are very supportive about this law, and as far as the interfering with federal law, obviously federal law trumps that. It's going to be interesting to see how, if it does pass, how the two can cope.
Yeah, because there was some talk early on that, you know, that maybe this issue could be the one that throws the state away from Obama. We may see that happen.
I mean, I don't think it's likely that happened. I reported earlier today that the many of the voters that were hitting the polls were motivated to come out and vote because of this amendment. A lot of the people were a younger demographic, and it seems as though they, for president, may be voting for a guy like Gary Johnson, who's a Libertarian candidate, who is for legalizing marijuana. It might hurt the president, but at the same time, it could also hurt Mitt Romney as far as having some of his votes go to the Libertarian candidate.
Are there any stories of you know, suppression, any stories of, you know, nonsense going on out there? I mean, like here in Philadelphia, you know, they're doing everything they can do to make sure that people cast provisional ballots. We've seen stories on fake news on Fox that, oh, the Black Panthers are everywhere. They're opening doors for people.
And no controversy in Colorado thus far. I did read a report earlier, though, that they're was one precinct that had some voting machine malfunctions, a technical problem, nothing that couldn't get fixed. What I was told and what was reported was that they just switched out the machine, and after that, the votes that were in the machine were tallied and counted, and that was the end of that controversy. So nothing major here in Colorado thus far. Like I said, the big story here is Amendment 64 got a lot of people out. Voter turnout saw an increase because of that. And right now the president is leading with about 35% of precinct report.
Now, maybe the reason there's nothing going on, no problems out there, is everyone's high.
that may very well be.
So some of the other states around, I mean, Nevada is still in play, one of the swing states. What are you hearing about Nevada? Anything?
Nevada, you know, the polls are just closed there. Right now we have about 7,000 votes counted for Mitt Romney. 4,000 for Barack Obama. It's been leaning towards President Obama. Two of the cities and two of the counties, Clark County, where Las Vegas is, and up where Reno is, are the two counties that essentially choose that state. So depending on how those two counties vote, I think that's where we'll see Nevada go. Right now, though, it's still too early to tell about Nevada. Only 1% of precincts reporting there. So we'll have to wait until further along in the night to get a more accurate prediction for Nevada.
So what's your sense on how things are going to go in Colorado?
In Colorado, I definitely think the president is going to pull it out here. It's about 35% reporting, like I said. He has a 3-point lead right now. And going into today, he had a 5-point percentage lead, according to the public policy polling figures that were released on Monday. So he had a lead going into today, and it seems as though he's sustaining that lead as the night progresses. What's interesting to me is, I've been in Colorado all day, but I've been looking at states like Florida, where the president is basically neck and neck, but it still has an edge on Romney, and then Ohio, where the president has come out pretty strong with 67% reporting, at 50% compared to Romney's 48. Bob Ney, former Congressman Bob Ney, has been there all day, talking to people on the ground, and it's been an interesting race so far.
Yeah, I mean, the Ohio situation to me is interesting because, you look at all of the discussion about Jeep, listen to all of the tough talk about China, and you find out that, Romney was behind the whole Delphi deal and all of those auto parts jobs going over to China. I would have to imagine that that's something that's playing on the minds of Ohio voters as we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the polls have been closed. And it seems as though that Ohio is definitely up for grabs still, but definitely leaning towards the president right now. And that's obviously one of the crucial states that the president needs and Mitt Romney needs if they want to reach that magic number of 270.
So in Colorado, what's the turnout? What are they saying the turnout's like? Is it 2008 levels? Where are they putting it at?
From the people that I've spoken to, they haven't matched 2008 levels. The young voters aren't as enthusiastic this time around, but like I mentioned earlier, the inclusion of Amendment 64 on the ballot has raised the expected voter turnout, still not matching 2008 numbers. That was a big election, but they're pretty impressive as far as this year's concerned.
Good deal. Benny Martinez, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. Thanks for the update.
Thanks, Rick. Have a good night.
Yep. You know, and I look at this, and, you know, for me, the big race out that way is the tester race out up in Montana. Right now, polls just closed a little bit ago, I guess, and there's some trickling in. I'm hoping Tester remains in that seat. And I look at the guy who's – Rareberg has always been one of those guys that I look at as just out on the fringe. And that would be, for me, one of those – those setbacks of the night, but it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Again, you know, the Senate seats, you know, still 48-42. The Democrats seem to have the lead. Again, Maine still up for grabs, it looks like. Actually, I think they've called that one for the independent, who I've heard reports it's possible that it's possible that this guy may caucus with the Democrats, as where initially I had thought, being a former Republican, he would have caucused with the Republicans. There was a statement that made people think, well, we're not quite so sure. He said, you know, it depends on how people treat him during the primary. So if either of the Democrat or Republican went after him, maybe he would flip to the other side. But it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But he has been, Angus King, he has been elected the senator from Maine to replace Olympia Snow. Bernie Sanders walked in with 71% of the vote. That was called fairly early. And again, Elizabeth Warren, she is the senator from Massachusetts, beat Scott Brown and beat him pretty handily. Also in Connecticut, Murphy beat McMahon, the big billionaire money there, the Wrestling Federation money, $100 million. I mean, can you not think of something better to do with $100 million? I mean, really, I mean, it's just mind-blowing. And here in Pennsylvania, with about 87% of the vote in, Casey, almost 55% over Tom Smith with 43%. So that's a step in the right direction. Sherrod Brown beat Mr.
They think coal is a four-letter word.
Yes, they do. Beat him fairly handily, 50 to 45. So that's a step in the right direction. And, of course, Murdoch lost in Indiana. The Lugar seat that, you know, was safe Republican seat for years has now shifted hands to the Democrats. So far, good night. And the seat that everyone thought was going to be lost, Claire McCaskill, the incumbent from Missouri, she's held on to her seat and pretty handily, a 10-point margin there. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com. For a rich example of unbridled boss power in today's political process, hearken back to August when Mitt Romney appeared on a stage with a group of Ohio coal miners behind him. "I tell you," the clueless candidate cheerfully exclaimed, "you've got a great boss." That would be Robert Murray, CEO of Murray Energy, who had previously held a $1.7 million fundraiser for Romney. But if Mitt had just turned around and seen the scowls on the faces of the Murray miners, he would have had a clue that they didn't quite share his enthusiasm for their great boss. One reason is that they hadn't volunteered to be there, but had been directed by Bossman Bob to attend. Also, Bob was docking them a day's pay for taking the day off to be stage props for Mitt's campaign. In effect, they were compelled to donate to the Republican. Such involuntary support is routine for this corporation's salaried employees who've been hit up again and again for donations to Romney and other designated candidates. Murray himself sends dunning letters to employees' homes, specifying to each one how much to give and instructing them to send their checks directly to corporate headquarters. Staffers there maintain a list of those who did as told and those who didn't. If you don't contribute, your job's at stake, one employee bluntly explained. Indeed, Murray deploys his lieutenants to squeeze the laggards. As the boss put it in one letter to them last year, "Please see that our salaried employees step up for their own sakes." In another letter this March, he even named names of those he considered shirkers. "I do not recall ever seeing the attached list of employees at one of our fundraisers," he said pointedly. This is Jim Hightower saying, after Romney's great boss statement, he added that Murray, quote, "runs a great operation here." Yeah, a political shakedown operation sanctioned by the Supreme Court.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Someone tell the GOP that Ohio's not for sale.
To the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So it looks like it's over. I mean, you look at the Fox fake news on Fox's website. They've got Obama with 268. They got him with 268 votes. Oregon is not in. Oregon is going to go Obama's way. That's seven electoral votes. That puts him at 275. The 270 number, it's over. And you don't need Colorado. You don't need Nevada. And you don't need Virginia. Even though those are still all in play, Obama is, they're neck and neck in Virginia. Colorado, Obama's up by four at this point. Nevada, Obama, you know, it's still early. So it looks like it's over. And, now the question is where do we go from here? And I love what Keith sent me, during the break. He said, "I love how Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are like the adults of Pennsylvania politics, and Central PA is like the bratty child." He writes, "The kid screams, 'I want Oreos for dinner!' And the adult yells, 'Too bad we are having meatloaf.'" Oh, well, you know, you gotta... if only we could do something to take back the center and bring back some sanity. And you know, I look at and talking earlier with Mike Fedor, the chairman of the Cumberland County Democratic Party, I look at the fact that you had a couple of a House candidate and a Senate candidate here in the state that ran unopposed. That can't happen. That absolutely cannot happen. Even if you take your thumping, and this is one of the things I always gave Newt Gingrich credit for. In the 90s, the one thing that he did for the Republican Party is he made sure that people had money to go out. Now, look, they got tons of money. The wealth class made sure that they well-funded all of these campaigns. But even if they knew they were going to get a thumping, you still put somebody out there to run against them, because then you're tying up the other side's resources. And actually having the conversation. And the one thing that I think that this 2 years of campaigning did for the Republicans is it gave them the opportunity to talk ad nauseum about their views. It gave them the ability to continue on and on, and to really push their beliefs on the rest of us. And good, bad, not sure. But looks like tonight things are going in a positive direction. You know, and I look at what happened, what's going on out in Wisconsin. It looks like Wisconsin, they've already called for President Obama and already called Tammy Baldwin as the winner in the senatorial race. I've got Kate Bellinger from Fair, Wisconsin on the line. She's there in Wisconsin to give us an update of what's going on there. Kate, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So a pretty good night for the folks in Wisconsin. You got a new senator and the state went for Obama.
Yeah, it's a great night. It's a great night. We're having a great time here in Madison.
So the question is, where do we go from here? I mean, now we've got Tammy Baldwin put into the Senate. Where do we move from here?
Well, first we've got to get through the initiative tonight. You know, we've got marriage on the ballot in four different states, so we're still waiting to see what happens with those different votes. And, you know, the sky's the limit at this stage.
You know, I talked earlier about a letter that the president sent to a young girl who she had two fathers, and it basically his response back to her was, you know, tell the people who are picking on you that, you know what, treat others the way you'd want to be treated. And it's, you know, I look at what's gone on the last couple of years, and really the last 10, 20 years with the Republican Party, they've become very, very much a mean-spirited party and a very intolerant one.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's been really interesting here in Wisconsin. We certainly had our fair share of a tumultuous political environment that we've been dealing with. But, you know, at the end of the day, we are really people who are being fair and decent and treating other people with respect. And I think you're seeing that today with the election results, where we have our first outlet elected to Senate in the entire country and the first woman from Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I met her when we were in Wisconsin for the occupation back in February of 2011. Seemed to be a very knowledgeable, very good candidate and well loved by the people, as is evident by the victory this evening.
You know, I've had the privilege of working for her several times during my career, and I have to say there is no elected official who's more genuine than Tammy Baldwin and someone who's more committed to really doing what's right for the people that she represents. So we're thrilled to have her in the United States Senate.
So how about her House seat? I know she gave up her House seat to run for Senate. How'd that turn out?
Well, you know, as if things couldn't get any better in Wisconsin, we have an amazing new congressional representative in Mark Kahn. He's been a state legislator here in Madison for many years. He's actually followed Tammy into the state legislature when she ran for Congress. He's an out gay man. He is a true progressive and a fabulous legislator. So we are going to be well taken care of in this district now that Tammy's moving on to bigger things.
So, but you're still going to be stuck with Paul Ryan.
Well, in part of, you know, I mean, that's the thing. He's still relegated to his individual congressional district and has not risen to a higher level. So, you know, it is what it is on that race, but we're very excited about the statewide results.
Yeah, you know, the first thing I thought of is you can have him. Thank you for keeping him.
I guess we'll take one for the team.
You know, because, you know, I don't often, you know, I don't. Yeah, you know, he looks like somebody who needs to be slapped.
Well, I'll leave those as your words, but I think that we're all much better off having him in Congress as opposed to being the Vice President of the United States.
And thank you for keeping Tommy Thompson. Did he ever get the V-chip? Because I remember back when he was the head of Health and Human Services, he said that at some point, I think when he left, he said he was going to get chipped. He was going to put that V-chip in his arm so that people could track him. Did he ever do that?
You know, who knows what they did to him when he was out in D.C.? And I think that, you know, what you're seeing with Tammy's victory tonight is that the people of Wisconsin weren't really sure what happened to him when he left our state either. So I will leave that to your best guess.
So now the question becomes, you know, you got to get rid of Scott Walker. I guess the organizing begins tomorrow to try and unseat him.
Yes, it's one election to the next here in Wisconsin. That's been the trend for the last 2 years, and I think, you know, we've really got to look ahead at what's going to happen here in 2014, and we're still waiting to see the results from a lot of our state legislative battles tonight, too. So we'll see. The work never ends, but tonight we get to celebrate.
Congratulations on a hard-fought victory, even if Tommy Thompson likened her to a dead deer.
That couldn't be farther from the truth, but I think we both agree about that one.
All right, Kate, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Take care.
And again, you know, another one of these good victories, which you need more of. And I'm hoping that this momentum continues throughout the night, and we're able to, here on the state level, I'm still hopeful. There are a number of state races that I'm still watching that I'm hoping, will turn out because, at the end of this, for me, it's about stopping some of the real insanity that's gone on the last couple of years. And you look at Wisconsin. When we were out there 2 years ago, the attacks nonstop. And for me, the more I look at this, the more getting folks out, getting folks to vote, this is what we should be moving more towards. I want to take a quick break right here. When we come back, we're going to take a look at Virginia, see what's going on down there. Hopefully, I think it's over at this point, but we'll find out which way Virginia is going to go. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
And we're not going to bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town. All down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain. Divided we bear.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high-interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pscu.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Earth, sky.
We think of the planet Mars as a world much like Earth. Both worlds orbit in the inner solar system, and they're similar in size.
But Mars might have developed very soon after the birth of our solar system, while Earth is thought to have formed much later. 4.5 billion years ago, a disk of gas and dust is thought to have surrounded the early sun. Within the disk, kilometer-sized chunks of material called planetesimals collided to form the embryos of the planets we know today.
Earth is thought to have developed as late as 100 million years after the solar system began to form through a series of continued collisions. On the other hand, Mars might have stopped growing at its embryo stage only about 2 million years after the solar system began to take shape. If that's so, it would explain why Mars is the runt among inner worlds of our solar system and why its geology is profoundly different from that of Earth.
Astronomers refined the age of Mars by using carbon on Martian meteorites. So Earth formed through a series of collisions over tens of millions of years. But Mars may be a solitary embryo, a world that did not undergo continuous collisions. To learn more, come to earthsky.org and search for Mars Embryo. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
And you know, the sandwich guy said, you touch this, go pay the cashier, there's your sandwich. It's amazing.
Ho, 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 it's magic.
I just can't get it out of my head. I'm sorry. It just won't go.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Didn't quite work out that way. Let's go down to Virginia. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service. Jeff, what's going on in Virginia?
Well, we're still waiting for the full results of Virginia to come in, but we know that President Obama has won the election. He will remain in office for another 4 years, and his win in Ohio is what clinched it.
Yeah, well, the big win there. Also, it looks like Tim Kaine has been elected as the senator. Is that true?
Yep, Tim Kaine. It was a close race, actually, in the Virginia Senate race between him and George Allen, but he was able to pull that one out. And if I can just pull up my numbers here, looks like Kaine won that race by a very narrow margin, actually, about a point. About 51 to 40, well, about 2 points, actually. And again, not 100% has been counted, but yeah, I mean, it was a straight, pretty much a straight sweep, for Democrats, at least in Northern Virginia, which is where I was, today.
How much do you think of it's been Romney's, you know, I've been calling him Romney 360 all around every issue and folks really not knowing where he's at?
I do. I think that's absolutely a factor. You know, it's funny. I was listening to, Rush Limbaugh today because, you know, it's like an election day tradition that I have to listen to Rush Limbaugh once every 4 years. But Rush Limbaugh was saying that the media was to blame for not vetting President Obama and not knowing who President Obama was. And I'm thinking to myself, but we don't really know who Mitt Romney is either, and it's not really our fault. I mean, we know who Mitt Romney is, but we don't know who Mitt Romney is because he's taken positions on issues when it's been convenient to do so. And as a center right guy myself, I can say that, and I'm not really, I don't think that's really going far out on a ledge to say that. I mean, I think that, you know, I'd like to think that. An idea of Mitt Romney's core philosophical beliefs, but I think that you just can't politically take a position when it's convenient to do so. You have to stick by your convictions.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. We've seen in Republicans have seen in Indiana and Missouri, you know, that sticking by your convictions and publicizing them, you know, is a bad thing because sometimes your convictions are not extremely popular. I'm talking about Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch.
Right.
But in other times, you know, voters resonate with that. They like sincerity. They like a guy who sticks by his beliefs. And so I think that there are a certain amount of voters who were sort of hesitant because they didn't really know where Mitt Romney, you know, what he was going to do when in office. And I'll tell you another thing, Rick. I really think that the Obama campaign was able to effectively go after Romney and paint him as this corporate robber baron. I mean, I really think that the ads attacking Romney for his time at Bain Capital. The video, of course, that was leaked out from the campaign fundraiser when Romney disparaged the 47%. I mean, those things really hurt Romney. They were sort of written off at the time by Republicans who were hopeful that Romney could overcome that. But I think looking back, that those were really key inflection points in this campaign.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think the thing with Jeep recently hurt him as well because, you know, it highlighted the fact that he does have a history of outsourcing jobs during his time with Bain. And to try and project that on Obama, I just saw it as disingenuous.
Well, I mean, and yeah, and it was. I mean, when you have any time you have the CEO of the company coming out and saying, listen, that's false. That's a problem, and it wasn't as if the Romney campaign was very quick to disassociate it pull those ads and pull that, you know, attack line, out of his stump speeches. I mean, they kind of went with it, and, you know, I saw actually an interesting stat today in some of the exit polling that came out. 59% of Ohio voters who were surveyed said they support the auto bailout compared to 36%, and I thought to myself, that, to me, tells me that's not good for Romney.
Right.
Because, you know, I think the Obama campaign did a very good job of aggressively going after Romney on his position on the bailout. And I think that ultimately resonated with a lot of those folks in Ohio and probably Michigan, too, where Obama won easily.
Yeah, good point. Jeff Holtzman, I appreciate the time. Thanks for the update there from Virginia.
All right, Rick, no problem.
Great talking with you. You know, and bringing up the bailout, and, you know, to me, that was, again, that was a huge issue. And what I don't think really was examined as much as it should have been is where Romney would have wanted to go with that. You know, what was his vision? You know, running through bankruptcy, that's what he said. What would a bankruptcy look like? Well, it would look like a lot of the past bankruptcies that he had run companies through. And I think Jeff's right. They, you know, the Obama camp did an effective job of pointing out what reality was, saying, look, this is his history. This is what he made his money doing. And I guess from this point forward, what we need to start looking at is, as a nation, Is that the kind of economy that we want, where a handful of people get wildly wealthy shipping jobs overseas, exploiting labor, exploiting conditions here? Is that the nation we want? And I think about my favorite billionaire. And I think everyone should have a billionaire. We created them. We should be able to have a favorite. Mine is the guy who owns the Baltimore Ravens, the only guy on the Forbes 400 to be identified specifically as one who made his money, self-made man, they said, outsourcing jobs. So the misery that he caused millions benefited him wildly. And I keep going back to, is that the economy that we want? Is what Bain Capital did, is that what's in the best interest of the nation? And, yeah, I guess you could point to a number of areas where they succeeded in investing in a company that then grew, but at the expense of how many others? And I saw this report not just the other day that said, of the number of bankruptcies that Bain Capital had put companies through, it was like five times what the average hedge fund manager, the average vulture capitalist like that would have done. Because what they were doing is they were just saddling these companies with massive debt. And for me, it comes down to one thing. It comes down to, getting rid of those pensions. And this is where I keep saying to working people, you got to figure out what side you're on in this. We like to think we're a classless society. We like to think that, any one of us could be the Mitt Romney. When the reality is very few of us are going to be. And I used to love when I would do some organizing. People would say, I'm only going to be at this job a couple of months, maybe a year, a couple of years, whatever. I'm going on to bigger and better things. And I'd always respond by saying, on your way up, why not make what you're doing right now better for the guy behind you who's going to hopefully follow you up that ladder? Instead of what we've been seeing out of these hedge fund guys, out of these, I think Rick Perry had the best line, vulture capitalists, where it's all about picking things to the bone and how much you can put in your pocket. And I think in Ohio, I think folks saw that. And the auto rescue was the right thing to do. Now what we need to be doing is more of a jobs plan. And the hope is that this election will serve as that wake-up call to say, look, we're giving the president a vote of confidence. We're going to follow the plan. We're going to follow the path that's been digging us out of this crisis that conservative policy has created. More tax cuts for the wealthy. I mean, I really don't know how you can justify it. I don't know how you can justify the same failed policies that got us into this mess. I just don't. And I don't know how you'd run on that. It doesn't make a hill of sense. At least not to me, it doesn't. And the more I look at this, the more I just go, the hope is when they get back to the Senate, they get back to the House, and they sit down, and maybe John Boehner has a good cry, and, we decide that we're going to do things that are going to make the country better. I just saw something the other day, that even as Romney was saying that, we're going to pull the plug on all of those cylinders, and we're not going to invest in any of that solar stuff. Solar jobs here in the U.S. this year grew by 13%. Outpaced the other part of the economy. Because installations in the second quarter of this year grew by 116%. And why? Well, it's the loan guarantee program. It's the smart investment. And while we're never going to get off the oil and off the coal and off the natural gas by solar alone, I don't think we're going to. It's a step towards making us a little bit closer to energy independence. And I love some of the candidates who they ran this time around on the Drill Baby Drill platform. And you go, at some point, do you realize that that's a failed idea? And I was thinking about the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, who just over the summer it was, who said that with just the technology we have right now, we could get about 80% of our electricity from renewables. Just what we have today. That's not coming up with anything else. That's not inventing anything new. That's just what we've got right now. And you know, there's an opportunity for good investment. There's an opportunity to create jobs. There's an opportunity to get the economy moving, and I'm all in favor of it. And we should be moving in that direction. And you look at some of the polling that was done, not as bad as the Republicans would like have you believe. People get it. And you look at some of the exit polling that went on. We're a very divided nation. And I think it has come down to, where the wealth class has put the dividing line. I mean, they've tried to scare the hell out of seniors. And you look at, you know, people 65 and over, which are about 17% of the country, went to Romney 55-44. The folks 50 to 64, 28% of the country went to Romney 51-47. But as you got down to the middle, you know, 40 to 49 group there, pretty much split right down the middle. And the younger generation, they went decidedly for Obama. This idea that we're going to move forward, we're going to create new technology, and we're going to continue to grow forward, it resonated. And also, there was a split, you know, by income, and a pretty sizable split by income. Folks who made less than $50,000 a year, well, they saw a pretty decided difference. And those folks over 100,000, and you go back to the who votes. You know, the folks over 100,000, 28% of the country, 54% of them went to Romney. That 50 to 1,000 range, to 100,000 range, 52% went to Romney. Under 50,000, 60% went to Obama. So you start looking at how the country's breaking down, because you know, those folks who work for a living, the folks at the very bottom, Those people are struggling right now. They get it. They understand that they need the help. And that the economy's just not working for them. And it's because of the policies pushed forth by the business class. Something I hope we can figure out how to mend it and come together. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up. Again, President Obama reelected. And it looks like the Democrats are going to hold on to the Senate. Still looking at the House races. Quick break back after this.
Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything?
That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a New Deal initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America.
Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. You know, I saw this report today that, you know, fortunately, Joe Walsh no longer in the United States Congress, out of the House of Representatives, and maybe going back to being the deadbeat that he was. And I know, he must have paid Mama off. She came out with the statement, but still, $117,000 in back child support kind of makes you wonder. And I saw this story over at CNN Money that every year you see over $100 billion in unpaid child support across the country. And you know, according to the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement, $108 billion. And total back payments was owed to parents with the custody of children in 2009. $108 billion. And you go and you stop and you think about, you know, how much of that money, because I remember talking about the Joe Walsh thing when it came out. Because, you know, when I was a kid, my father, my sperm donor ran off. We never saw a dime, and we struggled. I mean, we lived in poverty because. And this is where I agree with Rick Santorum. You do need to have two parents. Where I disagree with him is this belief, well, it has to be a man or a woman. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's a man and a man, a woman, as long as it's two people who care about that kid and want the best for that kid and will protect them and feed them and clothe them and love them, that's all I care about. But I look at this, $108 billion in 2009, and what you saw is you saw families end up living in poverty. In fact, over half of that money, half of that $108 billion was shouldered by families. The rest of it was shouldered by taxpayers. Because we're the ones who pick it up. We're the folks who, government programs, CHIP, food stamps, WIC, and someone just emailed me that evidently the Walmart, over on, I think she said Grayson Road, not accepting WIC vouchers. And you go, what's that about? And she had asked the question, is this what's going to happen to all of the Walmarts? That they're not going to accept WIC anymore. And I don't know. I thought Walmart accepted WIC vouchers. I thought everyone did. Because it's good for society. It's good for the next generation. Again, this is one of those programs that maybe we should have continued to couch in terms of national security. Making sure babies get milk, a good thing because it's right, but maybe you have to couch it in national security. Just maybe that's what we have to do. But I look at this, $108 billion, and you go, you know what? Where are my Republican friends? Where are the family values people? Where's Santorum and the rest of them when they're talking about marriage? And I still love the Santorum quote.
Marriage is what marriage is. Marriage existed before there was a government. It's like, handing up this and saying this glass of water is a glass of beer. Well, you can call it a glass of beer, but it's not a glass of beer. It's a glass of water. And water is what water is. Marriage is what marriage is.
I'm going to miss him. I'm already missing the Republican primary. I really am. I'm missing all of the insanity that was. My thing is, if these family values types would start holding these people accountable, make them pay what they owe to make sure that the children that they father, that they don't live in poverty. And I guess this is a personal thing to me. Because I think back at all of the stuff that I had to endure as a kid because I had a deadbeat sperm donor. I don't want that for anyone. And you would think that the family values people. And I've said this about abortion in the past. If we had programs that said, every kid's going to get health care and every kid's going to get an education and every kid's going to be fed and clothed and have the opportunity and that they're taken care of, there's part of me that goes, I can see a time where you might say, well, we don't want abortion around. Personally, I say, make the opportunity available so that women want to bring children into this world. And hold men accountable. But as soon as you start talking about that, things change awful quickly. And I looked at one of the statistics from the National Women's Law Center, who pointed out that about 82% of custodial parents are women. And of those, what you see is something of a poverty existence, like my mother went through, because she had to figure out how to balance raising a kid and how to balance trying to find work and how to try and eke out an existence. And while things are maybe a little bit better now than they were in the early 70s, they're not all that much better. We still don't have paid family medical leave. We still don't have paid maternity leave. We don't have paid sick days. People don't have the opportunity to if the kid's sick, I can go. No. We don't have family values, family-friendly policy. No. And I look at what happened tonight. I'm hoping, and I know this is just, maybe a pipe dream, that we start talking about how we strengthen the family, how we strengthen the middle class, how we strengthen the working class of this country so that families have the opportunity, well, to live part of that American dream. Maybe it's just a pipe dream. Some good news, though. The folks in Kentucky and South Carolina, they are allowed to drink now. The last two states in the country where on Election Day, they outlaw the sale of alcohol. Kentucky, they end the ban at 6 p.m. When they close the polls. Five other states, Delaware, Idaho, Indiana, Utah, and West Virginia, well, 4 years ago, they had similar laws, but have since repealed them. Some good news for folks in New York, if you will. Mayor Bloomberg had to wait 40 minutes before he could vote. So maybe, you know, the guy who spent, well, I think $140 per vote in the last election, he had to stand in line like the rest of them. So maybe we are a more egalitarian society than I have ever thought. When the billionaire himself has to look in the book and find his own name, maybe there is hope after all. Anyway, tonight the president reelected as we said, looks like the Democrats are going to hold control of the Senate. The House, well, the House is going to remain in the hands of the Republicans. So now the question becomes, when we wake up tomorrow morning, what's the job? What do we begin? And what I'm saying, where we go from here is we start putting pressure on both parties to say, look, you've had your differences, you played your game, the last 2 years have been interesting to watch you bicker and fight and carry on. Now it's time, well, it's time to do the work, which means creating jobs. I mean, the Republicans ran on, in 2010, a jobs agenda. Oh, it's laser-like focus, and they've done nothing. The Democrats ran on, we're going to turn the economy around, and they have been slowly. We need some movement, and quickly. So the hope is when they go back for this lame duck session that they get the tax situation in order. We stop this sequestration and start looking at sensible ways of dropping down our spending on military so that, as Obama said during the campaign, we do some nation building at home. That sounds like a pretty good idea to me. I mean, if we've got all this money to go blowing things up and rebuilding them, maybe, just a thought, can we do it at home? Just maybe? I hope so. And for me, tomorrow what begins is we begin to push to go after those solid working class values, what made this country great, what my grandfather's generation fought for. Opportunity for their children, education, some security in old age, security on the shop floor. The things that created that American dream, which sadly for too many has been just that, just a dream. We can. I truly believe we can come through. We can come together now. I'm hoping that this election will be an opportunity. I'm hoping when Romney gives his speech, and that it's about coming together. It's about unity. It's about getting behind the president instead of what I fear. And what I fear is that they're going to use this election to be more divisive. It looks like at this point, it's tightening up as the minutes pass, but it looks like Romney could win the popular vote, could eke out enough votes for the popular vote and still have lost the electoral vote. My fear is that what we end up seeing is them trying to delegitimize this election. And I think that would be a huge, huge mistake. So good news for tonight. Tomorrow we begin the path towards building a better tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.